Hello and welcome to the Next Level Podcast, a miserable podcast of secrets. The official podcast of thenextlevel.com, the-nextlevel.com. This is Eric Mantz, your host, better known as Sleeve on the TNL forums, and with me as always is Chuck Forrester, better known as Chucks.
Yo.
And also with us is Chris Rubin, better known as McDeus.
What's up?
And also we have TNL's official, well, no, I guess unofficial, mascot. The man's so memorable he only has one name, at least on this podcast. Mizzo, MZO.
Holler.
And finally we have Nick Vlamakis, the fearless leader, who's going to tell us what's been going on with TNL this week right after he introduces himself.
Do I have to make some kind of street, like, word?
Word. I
How's
was going to
that?
suggest word if you said anything else. That was good.
As a fan of the power of the word, I'm honored to use that
Oh
as
my
my
God.
as my catchphrase.
So, Nick, please tell us what's been going on with TNL this week.
Well, it's been mostly suffering because I've been playing Zelda like a fucking idiot this whole past 2 days. So I haven't had much time to do anything else. But the arcade is back up, supposedly, theoretically. Don't look right yet, but if you go up there, we have a little time diversion. My goal is to eventually have people just going to TNL and staying there the whole day, just clicking link after link. And the arcade is I put an arcade in because I went to a lot of different forums and I saw that they all have these stupid weenie games, and it's just like the whatever game comes with the arcade software, which is some Tetris clone and some version of Snake, where you have to guide the little dot
Snake.
around. So I put in a few games there that I think are pretty good, and we're going to be holding contests and things tied to that. And one of our forum members, Korean, is really gung ho about getting some kind of tournament started. I don't know. So I just want to make him happy because I want him to be happy. So
I'm gonna get a high score in garbage like balloons.
balloons isn't garbage.
Sounds good enough.
These are
All right.
you're already starting to put down good games. I don't know what's you're just so hateful.
Okay.
And then of course the holiday wish list thread is up, where people can put up their lists of games and movies and whatever else. Socks are a big item, I guess, and have other people from TNL look through their lists, get ideas for their own lists, and we got some gifting going on. We're pretty close. We've been together for a lot of years. So that's pretty much all that's going on this week.
And then, as far as individual forum threads of interest, I think Chris is going to tell us a little bit about what's going on with that. Chris.
Yeah, well, one of the things which we're moving into is one of our members, Frog Akuda, he actually brought up a kind of cool thing, which was a thread he called I'm Staring at the Future of Gaming, which was pretty much about those individual moments throughout time where you have that game that you see, and it just looks absolutely amazing, like nothing else that you've seen before. Personally, I think that kind of a lot of the gaps that have occurred in between generations, as well as we've gotten older and we get more used to things, we definitely have less of that as we used to. I mean, at least to me. I'm sure that, there's definitely people who don't play games as much where whenever there's something like really big and new, like the first time you saw something like GTA 4, which was not as big a deal to me, but to some people, I mean, that sort of thing is just absolutely impressive to see a city realized just like that. But like for me, I mean, I was thinking back, a lot of the stuff I didn't even actually get to listing in that thread because I had a ton of games from back then. I remember one, which was there was this coffee shop near me which had a big computer that they could just like they would install random games on and stuff. And they actually had Quake on there. And this was back in the day when I had a 486. So I couldn't run games that had polygons on them. I couldn't run like
Wait,
anything that was.
so you're telling me there was a tabletop or there was like an arcade machine that was playing Quake?
No, it was just a computer. It was a crazy
Oh,
computer
okay.
that
All
was just
right.
like
All right, well,
set up
all right.
there.
I
It
gotcha.
was weird. Like this was I mean, this was like one of the first Pentiums that ever came out. So it was kind of odd to have this out. Like, this was way before the days of, you know, those networking bars and stuff like that. But, man, it was... I just remember going in there and actually seeing Quake for the first time and having, you know, the kind of the evolution of Doom.
Yeah.
And it was like now it's fully realized things could actually move around in complete 3D and come at you.
Was it,
and
was it just the whole
so
introduction of
great.
Polygons that did it? Was it the
Well,
the
no, because I mean, I'd been introduced to them before. Like, I played Alpha Waves way before that, which was... I mean, well, if you look at it now, it looks like absolute garbage. And I mean, it was neat, but it was kind of just the realization of a world, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was much more adult, it was much more realized, it was like, this is going to sound dumb now, but here are realistically modeled creatures, like, moving around in 3D, yeah.
Somebody's like, just gonna hurt himself. Something.
Yeah. It hurt a little bit inside to hear that.
Yeah, I think I just killed him. And I mean, it happens a lot with a lot of the stuff that used to blow me away. Like, and I feel so stupid saying this, but playing Battle Arena Toshinden for the first time.
Loser. Oh Lord.
I know, like.
Yeah, what were those ads for the Sony PlayStation? Was that the You Are Not Ready when they started showing those ads in 1995? Was that Sony that
ran
those?
I didn't understand those ads
until
like a
year
ago.
Was that the launch
of
the PlayStation?
When it
would
be like the
U,
and then the R, and then not, and then there was like a backwards red E.
Ready, yeah.
And that was ready? You Are Not Ready? I just got that like a year ago. Seriously.
I don't, what?
I think I still don't get it. What is there to get?
Like, it's a red
dude,
E.
You're not ready.
It's
you're obviously not ready,
ready
for that advertising
to show you
campaign.
A red letter E, which stands for the word ready. You are not red E.
Okay, I thought there was some kind of like reference to some Sony thing in that ad
no.
that I missed.
No, it's just
okay.
a red E.
All right.
Yeah, the ready I think took me a while too. Not that long, but
30 years. Then I was taking a shit one day, and all of a sudden,
Mizzo just says to myself, "Oh my god, it's a red E! I get it. I love it."
Yeah.
Because it was a blood in the stool.
That's what I was going
to
say,
Dan.
It was tasteless.
It was
the blood in the stool. I bit my lip on that and you took it. You ran with it. Anyway, we're really
so good.
Battle Arena Toshinden disrupted this conversation. Let's get back on track.
All right, so
I
guess
if you try to think about it logically, it makes no sense. Because like Virtua Fighter had come out on the 32X, and I think it came out around the same time on the Saturn. So it's not like, you know, 3D fighting games were out. It was just something about Toshinden just looked so awesome to me at home that I was just absolutely amazed to have this on a console at my house.
Yeah,
it was great, even though it's like the worst game ever.
I think for me, like the moment where I thought I saw the future of gaming, what came for me, like a lot of times, I don't know, I'm probably not the only person around TNL who's a big fan of Sega games, but I was always a big fan of Sega growing up, especially Sega arcade games. So I remember going to the local arcade in Scottsdale, Arizona, called Video Roundup, and, you know, like a Roundup type of, just explain that reference to people, like a, you know, like a cowboy Roundup type of thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot of older guys and chaps hanging around and
That type of thing. But they would have all of the new arcade games usually before anybody else did, and they would have the big sit down Sega games like Galaxy Force. They would have like the full on like rotating. I don't know if you guys ever saw that cabinet, but the one that you got in, it was like a rotating cabinet that as you turn the stick around, it fully rotated. And then they had the G-Lock rotating that was actually a gyroscope.
Oh, the Afterburner G-Lock.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, there was an actual game called G-Lock. And then, they had a special cabinet that was actually a gyroscope that you, when you tilted it around, it actually spun 360 degrees. It was totally vomit-inducing. But that, I totally thought was, like, the future of video games. And I remember totally being blown away by that, even though it cost, I think, like, at that time, like, $1 per play, which was, like, a lot. At least for Galaxy Force, I think it did. And then also...
It was a lot for, like, any game back then.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely.
In the arcade.
And I also remember reading about this. I never actually got to see this. Maybe Nick or one of you guys in Chicago got to see this, but the Battle Mech Centers that they had in Chicago.
Oh, I remember seeing those.
I was hugely a fan of like BattleTech, you know, the Mech Warrior games, and then I saw this in a magazine like sometime in the 90s. And like I learned that they had actually set this up where everybody had these consoles. You sit down constantly, get into, you get to pilot your mech. I thought like, oh my gosh, this is the future. I can finally like get in and like pilot my own virtual reality mech. This is the best. But of course, it never ended up becoming that way. We sort of moved in a more like miniaturized direction towards the future, like in a future where everyone carries around games in their little cell phones.
In a future where everyone carries their own games on their cell phones.
Yeah, I guess there was Steel Battalion. That was kind of an aborted move in that direction, which I never actually played. Oh. But
the sequel will have Kinect controls.
Oh, dear Lord.
Can't wait for that.
I'll review it. Give me it. I'll review it.
And as far as like the full-blown like Polygon era, like Chris was talking about with Quake. What I really remember again was arcade games. Like I remember Starblade, that old Namco game, which was basically an on-rail shooter where you moved around the crosshairs of the ship, and you couldn't really control where you were going, but it sort of just flew you around from place to place. And they even did, I think Namco also did Solvalu, which is like a 3D version of. You pronounce it Zevius or Zevius? I think I've always pronounced it Zevius. But I thought, I remember thinking like that was totally the future of gaming. But again, it wasn't. I was wrong. So those are my big moments. They all have to do with arcades.
The earliest time I remember being blown away with anything was when I went to the mall. And I don't know if it was Babbage's or some store somewhere had a computer set up and it was running Prince of Persia. And I was back at home playing, you know, shitty Nintendo games.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
And then
on
the computer, it's like this incredibly animated dude running around and climbing shit. And it was like the coolest looking game I had ever seen until that point.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
I think I also saw California Games, and that had, or maybe it was a Winter Olympics game. And that had really good animation, too. But then that one ended up being really bad. The Prince of Persia was awesome.
Yeah, I remember seeing Prince of Persia the first time on my friend's Apple II computer, and it was just blown away by it. Just the
animation
was great.
It was so impressive compared to everything else. Started a
life. And if you were like me, you brought it home and then got really mad at it because it was hard.
I love Prince of Persia. No, I loved every second of that game.
Oh, yeah.
No, I liked it, but it was hard.
I see. I kind of had not so much that it was hard. It was just that I didn't like the very specific movement that the character had, where it was like you push forward and like you jump a very specific distance. Yeah.
But everything was very controlled. Even though it was delayed, it was still very controlled. Like you knew when to push a button, and then two squares later or one square later, he would actually jump. So once you got used to it.
I don't think I ever fully caught up with that control until the first Tomb Raider.
Yeah, and that was cool because Tomb Raider, that was another moment where I was kind of taken aback by the technology. Like Super Nintendo, Genesis didn't really blow me away. It was more of an extension of things that already existed. It was cool. I was really excited for it, but I don't remember thinking, holy crap, they just changed the game. You know, it was just like, oh, this is better. What I'm doing, just better. But when the switch to polygons happened, I wasn't really big into PC games. And I had played Quake a little bit without mouse controls because that's how people first played Quake, and it was miserable. For anybody that remembers that far.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yes. Because I
you
played
make
through...
Config file
we were all
and
coming
stuff.
Off Doom.
I played through Doom and Doom 2 on the... Yeah, just the arrow keys. Not even the WASD.
Right. I went from Doom to Doom 2. I did Dark Forces, so that had up and down, but it was super clunky up and down. And then Quake, I played like Dark Forces until I think somebody came home from college, somebody I knew. Probably my friend's brother or something, and he was like, check this out, mouse controls.
Yeah,
and we were all just blown away.
Yeah, I could not adjust to that at first. It took me a long time to get used to that. I remember playing the demo of Quake and just being really, you know, weirded out by it almost.
Well, you know what? Did anybody buy Quake? I don't think a single person I
no,
know
I
actually
didn't.
Purchased
I was in
Quake
college
with money.
At the time. And
yeah,
they
were
I
all in
played,
college, so everybody just stole the shit
I just
out of
played
Quake.
The,
I would have bought it if I had any interest
demo.
In it at all.
if my computer could run it. Like I said, I had a 486. I couldn't run it at all.
Womp womp. Did you have the, did you hit the turbo button, Chris?
I didn't upgrade my computer until, like...
Did you try that?
Well, you could run Quake on a 486, couldn't you?
486 SX with 4 megs of RAM? No. I couldn't even run Duke Nukem 3D.
No.
Oh, my God.
I remember stuff like that. If you had Doom and you would minimize the screen size to make it, you know, run a little bit faster, if you made it the smallest, it was like, upgrade your computer, idiot.
Well, yeah, that's what a lot of people did. Like, I remember doing that for, I remember doing that for games.
I did that
like
for
Quake.
Tomb Raider. I played Tomb Raider on a tiny little window on my screen to make it run better.
Yeah, like,
before the 3D effects card came out. And
I
then
played
the game
through,
just exploded.
I played through, I guess we're getting a little off track here, but I played through the original X-Wing on PC on a, like a 386, and I just had to, I had to turn the detail down, like way down, but I eventually made it through, and actually made the last level where you have to blow up the Death Star a little bit easier, because if you turn the detail down, you have less things to fly through.
All those, all that lack of shading and no Gora, all that like complete no shading or textures really slowed down the computers back then.
Yeah. So
TNL is console people. That's good.
But like
let's
the
get back to consoles.
Yeah. Well,
we're
console
console
but what I was gonna say is like the big change that happened. I think for me, I don't know if it happened earlier for other people, but when I first saw it was when Mario 64 and Tomb Raider came out almost at the same time. And for me, it was Tomb Raider on PC and Mario 64 and N64. But it was just such. I think those were the first two games I ever played that did really. That was like 3D controls, 3D environments, only really well
actually,
done.
Actually, yeah, that reminds me. Super Mario 64. The first time I saw it was again. I was at college, and this little store.
You were
in college for like
20
years.
Yeah, it was a long time. I just graduated college last year. You guys.
Are you in college now? Do you have to study tonight?
Yeah. I got a big paper due tomorrow. But anyway, I stumbled into this small computer store that was, you know, just off campus, and this guy had Super Mario 64 running on the Nintendo 64. This must have been like 1996, and I remember playing it just a little bit, and it just being blown away by the fact that Mario was in 3D, and I didn't know what to do with it. I was like, wow, this is the third dimension, man.
Well, it was cool how they both came out almost at the same time, so it was kind of, for me, it was pretty much a tie as to which one, and then most 3D games followed the Mario formula afterwards. Not too many people copied Tomb Raider, because as you said, Tomb Raider was like the perfect realization of the original Prince of Persia in 3D, right down to the same control scheme and everything, like the way she would have delayed jumps and everything. So it was, the exploration in Tomb Raider was incredible. Like, I can't even describe playing this game for the first time compared to every other game I'd played before. The way I would climb the rocks, and you get to the top, and you come out. It's just that one level. You come out on the other side, and there's like a jungle underground, and you're like, what's going on? Why is there a jungle here? And then a raptor jumps out at you. You're like, okay, what? And then a T-Rex comes at you, and it's over. That game was so good back then. And Mario 64 was less exploration. Well, no. It had pretty big environments, too, but it wasn't as focused on exploration, I would say. It was a bit more of a...
See,
I don't even know what it was.
With me, when we're talking about I'm staring at the future of gaming, I think, to me, the bigger impact was, and this is because of stuff that was going on in my life around the time Mario 64 came out, but...
Don't say Athena.
The original, no, but a game very similar to Athena that actually inspired Athena. The original Super Mario Brothers. I remember that a friend of mine had it on a black and white TV, and the thing that impacted me the most was partly that it just, for me, it just came out of nowhere, because, you know, I had seen I'd played 100 Atari 2600 games, and I played one or two ColecoVision games, and, you know, I was familiar with that. I had no really PC gaming experience at all, but I just went to his house one day, and he said, let me show you this, and there was that odd shaped NES box sitting there, and he put on Super Mario Brothers, and when I saw the little guy running through, and then you just jump up, and in midair there's an invisible one-up box right near the beginning of the first I freaked out. The level just kept going and going, And this game to me just seemed so vast. You know, it's just like the whole the whole future of gaming, the whole gaming universe was encapsulated in that. There were games before that were bigger than the one screen. You know, even Indiana Jones on the Atari 2600, you got to do a lot of different things, go to a lot of different places. But Mario was just a step above. The way you could control him in midair while he was jumping, the way you could slide under the bricks, it really blew me away. And
All the secrets too were just so amazing too, and even the fact that you could control the pace of the scrolling, you know, from one end to the other, you know, you couldn't scroll back, but you know you could explore. I remember being blown away by that, especially.
Yeah, it wasn't one little thing. It was everything. Everything just got better. When you saw Super Mario Brothers, and the last thing you played was, you know, Donkey Kong on a home console, it was amazing. It was really, and it turned out that it was the future of gaming, because the NES was so seminal into launching. I mean, even the Super Nintendo and even the PlayStation, the Sony PlayStation came from that in a way. And Mario's still going strong today. And then I think the second game that really freaked me out was Lunar on the Sega CD. In fact,
yes.
I think I said this on the old Game Go forums, and I haven't said it since because it's kind of embarrassing. But I had signed up for my first year of college, and I was kind of not into it at the time. I was really, you know, just I'm signed up, I'm taking classes, but I just wasn't really into it. I was just one of my bored periods. And Lunar came out, and I saw it, and I bought a Sega CD, and I bought Lunar on the same day. I actually bought it with financial aid money that I got from college.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I took the financial aid money, I bought Sega CD, I bought Lunar.
No, U.S. government right now.
And I started disappearing from classes, and nice. I eventually dropped out of that semester because Lunar wasn't the whole thing, but I'll always remember that as I...
It was Sewer Shark, wasn't it?
Yeah, no.
There was also Mad Dog McCree.
He came back, he bought it for like Lunar, Dracula, but he came back for Sewer Shark.
Yeah, but too. Lunar, when you have that video and like, Alex, hey Alex, wake up, sleepyhead, and you have the intro song at the beginning, coupled with this classic RPG gameplay and just the things that really, at that time, I loved about role-playing games, couple that with all that animation and that voice, I just couldn't take it. And I just played it and played it like an idiot. And then the next game, I think, after that, the next two games are related, and then I'll end it, but not my life. I'll end this little segment. But I love Skyward Sword so much that I'm just going to kill myself, man. No, Shenmue and Grand Theft Auto 3, which are kind of related. I read about Shenmue well in advance. I followed every bit of news on it. In fact, I haven't really done that with a game since, because I kind of don't like to do that now, because it spoils some things for me. I'd rather enjoy them. But Shenmue, I was in a frenzy just thinking that, you know, all these townsfolk could just walk around and go on with their lives, and you had all these possibilities. You could decide to follow the story. You could decide to wander around. You could, you know, play Lucky Strike. Or I think that was in the second one.
Would you like to have
Lucky Hit?
Lucky Hit, sorry. Lucky Hit. Lucky Strike.
Did
cigarettes.
You want to play a game of Lucky Hit?
Excuse me, how about a game of Lucky Hit?
Can I interest you in a game of Lucky Hit?
Yeah, so I think...
How about a game of Lucky Hit?
And I think that the open world, which we talked about previously, did turn out to really be a big part of the future of gaming. So I think, unlike Sleeve, who said he was kind of wrong about some of the future of gaming instincts he had, I think that Mario Brothers, not Lunar, Lunar kind of fizzled out. RPGs aren't like that anymore. But Shenmue and Grand Theft Auto 3, which also blew me away when I first saw it, and I saw the possibilities. I think it's a coupling of technology and the possibilities for experiencing things on your own terms and just really getting to show off your take on a game world. I think that's what really appeals to me and a lot of people.
Well, it's a unique thing about video games where even a finished product isn't really complete until they put it in your hands, and then you are kind of taking part in the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that they create something. They create something that you then take a part of. And that's different from any other type of of creation, art style, or anything. Painting's a finished painting, a movie's a finished movie, but a game is very much only half done, and you pretty much complete the other half with your action, basically.
Oh, and kids, I did go back
to
school.
That's very profound.
Please stay in school. Please, take it from me. You'll have your own game site one
day. Don't drop out just to play the latest video game.
I think I missed classes because of ZA, like the first 10 or 15 man dungeon in Warcraft.
Really?
Chucks remembers that? Yeah.
What's ZA, Mizzo? Tell us what ZA is.
Zul Aman.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not going to go into it because Warcraft is horrible.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, that's good enough, but thank you. Chuck, did you want to tell us about your...
Mine's a little different. I'm thinking you guys are talking about, you know, games and stuff of that nature. But I was thinking more along the lines of stuff like Phantasy Star Online being the first game on a console that people would be playing online only. You know, I mean, you had the single player game, but it finally brought us. I know there was X Band, and you know, you could do horrible at Weapon Lord on Super Nintendo with that.
Nice.
But there was you'd really be playing it with people. You'd start to get a group together that you knew. And it was a good time. I mean, I met a lot of people from TNL and GameGo that would play PSO. You know, we would talk on the board. Hey, you know what? We're going to log on around 10:30. Let's knock this out. It was a lot of fun. And then a little bit more later on the Dreamcast, I think it was even after the Dreamcast had stopped being supported, Alien Front Online came out, and you could use the voice chat. And I think that's the first console game you could use voice chat on. And then obviously... Right. Well, I Wikipedia also.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it came with a microphone, didn't it?
Yep, it did. Yeah. And that was a big claim to fame.
That was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
I remember,
you know, and people weren't being stupid back then. They weren't calling everybody, you know, racist stuff and asshole and what have you.
Yeah, I remember playing that with TNL people too, or at least GameGo people.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think back then having an internet connection.
Right.
And actually, you know, like it was kind of a pain in the ass to sell that stuff up. So only. I don't know if, like, any little kids had access to it, so that may have kind of helped a bit in terms of curbing the
Well, I remember I was playing PSO on dial-up. I know that much.
Oh, Lord. I know. So was I. I think I actually, because of my Dreamcast, is why I actually got my own account with AT&T. Before
it's
then,
I
believe...
why I got my own line, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I played it on dial-up also. Any Dreamcast games that I played online were on dial-up.
Before then,
I think
it
had
like
a broadband
account.
Adapter, but it was so rare and hard to find, and
it
became
it was
so
super
expensive
rare.
Too.
Same thing happened with the GameCube broadband adapter, also.
Oh, yeah.
For
it was
PSO
all about
56K.
Again.
We gotta do a show on some of the internet technology, like the Sega Channel and browsing
the
internet.
I never used the Sega Channel. How did that even work? You got to play games on a cable channel?
Oh, my gosh,
I can
talk about
should,
that.
We should do a show.
We're not going to talk about it now.
I'll give you, think of on-demand. Think of on-demand.
Yeah.
This was way ahead of its time. 20 years ago. That makes no sense.
Yeah, it was revolutionary.
It was awesome. It was a special cartridge that you plugged your cable into. It had coax on it. And you plug it right into the Genesis, and I think you got to play Primal Rage like a month or so before it came out.
Some of the best days of our lives.
Yeah, it was awesome. That was
a vomiting monkey in Primal Rage.
You would be sitting home from grade school, and you didn't have a job or anything, and you just veg out at your friend's house playing Sega Channel all day. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it was awesome.
That sounds pretty rad.
And it was cheap too, you know, comparative. Because you figure if you go out and you buy like Vector Man and Primal Rage and Sonic 2 and all these other games, and they were like, what, $60 a pop, 50?
Yeah.
That right there is the future of gaming before anybody even had a concept of what that would actually be like, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Digital distribution 100 years ago when we were still banging rocks around.
Sega way ahead of the curve, but just never put it together. Always loses in the end, poor guys.
Were you able to save your games on Sega Channel? I forget. I know
I
played Shining Force 2 on it.
I'm not sure though. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, that's a good topic for another podcast.
Well, speaking of the future of gaming, let me take everyone back, move it, and segue into our next subject. Take everyone back to February 21st, 1986. When a game was released on the Famicom disk system called, I won't even give you the Japanese name, but
please don't.
Later known to us as The Legend of Zelda. It was released in 1986 in Japan, and here we are in 2011, the 25th anniversary of The Legend of Zelda. Yes, 2011. We're recording this podcast 2011. So we're on the 25th anniversary of this historic gaming series. And since that first game was released, it wasn't actually released in the United States until the following year. So it's 24th anniversary, I guess, if you're talking about, you know, the only country that matters, the United States. But anyway,
all right, Michael Bay.
this is a big, important video game series that all of us have memories about. Some of us have played more games in the series than others, and of course, this year we've seen the release of Skyward Sword, as well as a release of on the Nintendo Wii, as well as a re-release of Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time on the 3DS, Nintendo 3DS. So. The 25th anniversary of The Legend of Zelda is our main topic for the podcast today. So,
you know, re-segueing into this, if you ask me my favorite consoles, I usually say like Dreamcast and Saturn. I say a lot of Sega consoles or even the Xbox 360. But when you think about it, when you think about the NES having Super Mario Brothers, having Metroid, and having The Legend of Zelda. It's such an accomplishment. The Legend of Zelda, when it came out, I mean, we had one TV in the house, and it was a Philco TV. We had this really cheap TV, and if you would stomp around in the house, the volume would go to max suddenly.
Nice.
Yeah, it was like automatic remote control, and then you would have to stomp on the floor again or hit it on the side like Fonzie to get it to go down.
Did you have it hooked up with the little antenna clips, the little alligator clips?
We just had the rabbit ears, I think. So, I mean,
like the Nintendo system.
Oh, with alligator clips?
Or maybe I'm thinking of an Atari system now.
Yeah. Don't interrupt me. Anyway.
I don't know what he's talking about.
I'm reminiscing, man.
You have to actually clip your consoles into the antenna thing for the really old TV.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I had these two little tiny, like, robot hands, like little prongs.
Yeah.
And you had to actually put them into the screen.
Yes, I did have to do that, as a matter of fact.
Okay. That's what I was asking.
So we had the one TV.
Alligator clips are different.
We had the one TV in the house, and I would play Zelda every chance I got. I would have to like actually do stuff around the house so I could earn brownie points to get on the TV more. And I played Zelda till it just almost burned into my retinas. I would close my eyes and I would see the overworld. I would see the Peapods and the Octoroks and whoever else.
Oh my!
Yeah. And
I remember that too.
Those are amazing gaming memories. I don't know if people. I mean, do you think people get even the same level of just being blown away with the game as because now there's technology everywhere. But with Zelda, not only was the technology impressive, but the story, the characters, the size of the game, the way it almost became your life for days and even weeks on end. It's a very special series.
I know in those days there were fewer games available. So, I mean, the market was much smaller. So a big release like The Legend of Zelda, you know, naturally had a bigger impact, it seems like. You know, there were fewer consoles, fewer games coming out. So when a big cartridge can't like this came out, especially when it was golden, you know, when the original cartridge was released, I guess that makes more of an impression on people. But
and this was a game that didn't need any gimmicks. It didn't need a gold cartridge or anything. It was, I don't know. I haven't played it since then. But
yeah,
I don't know how well it holds up. But it was such a great game at the time.
I
remember the first. Oh, you can go.
Yeah, thanks. I remember buying it. I was actually on vacation with my parents. In San Diego.
In college.
When I first...
I thought you were in college.
No, I wasn't in college. I had not reached college yet. I was still a grade schooler. But I got it at a...
Pre-college.
At a hardware store at while I was in San Diego. And I wasn't able to play the game right away. I had to, you know, wait, you know, what seemed like a week at least in order to get back home so I could play it. And I only had the instruction manual to read. You know, while I was on this vacation, so I was studying it. I was reading about it, and even before then, I had heard about it. I read the Nintendo Fun Club newsletter, which was the precursor to the to Nintendo Power, and they had described it in one of the issues, and you know they were you know hyping up this big game that was going to be released and how it had a they said it was so big that the game was so big that they had to add a battery into the cartridge in order to save your progress because the game was just so massive. So I had no concept of what this game was going to look like. I don't know if it's going to be first person. I don't know if it was going to be, you know, what I had heard of role-playing games before. I hadn't really played them much, so I didn't know how this was going to play out on the Nintendo. And even, you know, the instruction booklet doesn't really give you a really good idea. It has all these funky cartoon drawings of Link, at least in that, you know, anime style. So other than the screenshots, I didn't really know what I was getting into. And, of course, you know, when I finally got the game, you know, I was really addicted to it. And all my friends, of course, got into it. And, you know, since I had gotten it before my friends, you know, I was able to give people hints, you know, discover secrets and tell people where things were located, that type of thing. And actually, I wanted to confess something for the first time ever on this podcast.
You dress as Link.
Yeah, I want to take this opportunity to make a confession. Well, I mentioned the Nintendo Fun Club newsletter. They did a call. You know, oftentimes, they would publish people's high scores. And if you got a particularly good score in a game, you take a picture. Remember those days? You take a photograph of you beating the game or getting especially high scores, send it in a Fun Club newsletter, they publish it. So when I finally beat Zelda for the first time, I took a photograph. I figured out how to beat Ganon, you know, I'd shoot the silver arrow at him after hitting him enough times, and I beat him. I was so psyched. You know, I was the first person to beat the game among my friends. So, you know, I sent the picture in, and then the next issue of the Nintendo Fun Club newsletter, they published my name along with a bunch of other people as being the first people in the country to finish the second quest, the second quest.
Yeah.
And of course, that was another big thing that Nintendo, that the Zelda game had, you know, was a second quest full of, that was much more difficult. Everything was moved, enemies were harder, and all that stuff. So, you know, again, I mentioned how there were fewer media outlets, there were fewer games available. People were, you know, looking all over the place for information about Zelda. So what happened was, like, people didn't know much about the game, but they knew about this newsletter. So people saw my name in this newsletter, and they called me for, like, all over the country. Like, they called my house. They called me, like, asking me for hints on, like, the second quest, like, how to find some dungeon. And I would tell them, like, if I was there, like, my parents were a little bit weirded out by it. But I guess my number was unlisted, but somehow people would get my number through my uncle and they would pass it on. And then I became, like, even more renowned as the person, one of the first, you know, six people, whatever, to finish the second quest. But the truth was that I never actually finished the second quest. Like,
what?
I never did. Like, I got to the very end, and I never, like, I never bothered to actually find Ganon in the Death Mountain dungeon. Like, I just got lost, and I just got tired of looking for him. But, you know, like, for years, like, I was known as, like, the Nintendo Fun Club newsletter. You know, I would still get calls from, like, random people who referred me, you know, like, people who worked at, like, hardware or, you know, electronic stores would pick this up, and they would say, oh, yeah, call this guy. He'll be able to tell you. Like, I even, like, parlayed that into writing a column of hints and tips for, like, Nintendo games for the local video store, you know, because of this. Like, it was the strangest thing, and it was all based on a misunderstanding.
You mean, you know, a lie?
Like, well,
deceit.
It wasn't really a lie, because I didn't lie and say that I had beaten the second quest. I just sent in this photograph.
Oh, they just published, Nintendo
some
just
functionary,
published,
you know, some editor over there just assumed that I had beaten the second quest and then published published me as one of the people who beat it.
I was so envious of you until you told me that you hadn't beat it, because that was my biggest shame.
I announced that I never actually beat the second quest. I mean, I got to the very end. I just never found Ganon the second time, so I never did it.
And I've never really played Mario 3
either.
Would
you call the whole farce a miserable pile of secrets?
Yes, I would. I would call it a pile, even a miserable pile of secrets.
Secrets are revealed. Souls are fused together.
First time today.
We become stronger. We become closer.
Final destination, no items.
Yeah.
Unlike Nick, that's my biggest Zelda.
I kind of had a backwards thing going on there. By the time I got Zelda, that whole code to just go right to the second quest I knew about.
Yeah.
And so I only played the second quest.
I did the same damn thing, and I was waiting to tell that story, and you just fucking
added it. Yeah,
but
Zelda,
I did the same damn
name,
thing.
Right? Is that the code?
Yeah, that was the code.
Right.
But I never thought to do that. Like, I would always want to play the first.
That. I didn't find out until years later that the second quest was harder than the first quest.
Right.
I think it must have been... God, it must have been years until I actually went, so what is the difference? What is
the original quest?
I went and tried it and was like, oh my God, this is so
stupid. The original quest is a trap devised by Satan, and you have to play it through the second time to get the true ending. It's just like that. I don't know. I never beat the second quest.
Well, the ending isn't... I've seen the ending. It's not that different. I mean, it calls you out by name rather than the...
Zelda's a dude.
It's the exact reverse of
the
Metroid.
Tunic drops. Yeah. The jaw drops.
Oh, no. No, that was Metroid.
Bulge.
That was Metroid.
Yeah, it's doing a transsexual, years before Final Fight tackled that controversial transsexuality, that controversial topic.
By the way, on a side note,
what about Birdo?
I contacted Nintendo after I got possession of TNL because I had all these old Fun Club newsletters that were just laying around, and I wanted to scan them and put them up on TNL just for public interest, and they wouldn't let me do it. They pretty much said, if you put that stuff up, we will sue you. But they said it in such a friendly way. Yeah.
That was Nintendo, though. They were known for not letting anybody do that kind of stuff with any of their
content. I might ask
them
again, because...
Maybe they're nicer now.
Yeah, I think they should go up.
Awesome.
I think those are cool. I mean, I remember the issue about Metroid and Kid Icarus got me really excited about those games. So they were very effective tools because you felt like gaming was so friendly back then. Zelda and Mario, it was just such a friendly time. And
games were made to...
But lawyers are behind all
the
fun. You know, they're standing behind there with bats. And so I guess you got to kind of do what they say.
Yeah. Well, I remember the first time I ever saw Legend of Zelda, I must have been like 7 or 8 years old. And I went to some dude's house. I don't even remember who this kid might have even been, but I think he was somebody that my mom might have been seeing, like not the kid, but the dad. And then the kid was like the son of that
person. Miserable piles of secrets.
Because they're not, no, that's, that would be horrible. But it's like, I don't remember this kid at all. I don't think I ever saw him again. Just this one time, I went to this dude's house, he had a Nintendo, and he was showing me, like, to get out of the adult's hair, you know? He's like, let's play Nintendo or whatever. And I had never seen the Nintendo before, first time ever. And for some reason, I thought Mario like shot barrels out of his hand instead of fireballs. Like, that's a memory I carried with me until I finally was able to play my own system. Just for that one night of playing, it's like Mario shot barrels out of his hand. I don't know why. And he let me play The Legend of Zelda for like a hot second. And I started the game. I got the sword. I went up one screen, and there were these octopi that were like shooting rocks at me. And I was so scared that I didn't leave the edge of the screen. And I just sat there staring at them, waiting for like an opportunity where I could enter the screen and maybe even try to kill one. And I realized that being on the edge made you invincible. And I kind of stayed there really long until he got annoyed with me. And then he took the controller and he started to play. So that was the first time I ever played Zelda. And then I rented it like a year or two later. And I did the second quest, like Chris said. And that was it until I bought it. I mean, I think I actually purchased it and beat it legit, like the first quest, after Super Nintendo came out. Like, I waited on that a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, my only other really, really strong memory of Zelda from back then was actually about Link to the Past. Because for some reason, like, I didn't have an SNES when Link to the Past actually came out, and so I would only play it when I was over at one of my friend's houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember this one time we were having a sleepover and watching Casino I was playing.
Zelda. How old were you?
How old is Casino?
This wasn't with Mizzo's mom's friend, is it?
This is the same guy.
Chris was Mizzo's mom's friend.
I don't recall. I mean, it was early teens. It was like on one TV we had Casino, and on the TV next to it I was playing Zelda. And so it's like whenever I hit certain parts in Link to the Past, I remember scenes from Casino.
Wow.
Because I just ended up with that association.
Something
kind
green.
Of like how...
Yeah.
Yeah, like the first time I played Parappa the Rappa, I was eating Funyuns. And so for some reason, every time I play Parappa, I smell Funyuns.
That's appropriate, though. That's oddly appropriate.
That does sound about
I'm okay
right.
I'm with that. Well, I have one of the Stone Temple Pilots CDs just linked completely with Mario 64 because I got them both for Christmas. I think it was Tiny Music from the Vatican Gift Shop for some reason. Just if I hear that, it's Mario 64 memories everywhere. And Populous is Ordinary World by Duran Duran because the music video was playing at the time, and for some reason it kept happening when I was playing Populous in the same room. And for some reason that's just linked forever.
Anyway. I have a memory of what was it? Link's Awakening. I got that when I was as soon as it came out. But the way for my parents to keep me quiet while we were on a road trip to where we were going for vacation was to just buy me a Game Boy game whenever they came out.
Nice.
And I definitely played the hell out of that game on the way to Nag's Head from Maryland. So it's like a 9-hour drive and back. And it was good times. And they did not talk to me at all for that vacation. And it was so good. That game was so awesome.
It was a really good game. I was expecting it to be kind of crappy because Mario Land was a little crappy compared to Mario, you know? I didn't really see...
A little
see...
crappy? Mario Land was really crappy.
I really like Mario Land. Mario Land
no, it's
fun.
Good, but it's crappy.
But it's crappy
because by
compared
that time,
Mario,
2
yeah.
had come out, right? Or had 3 even come out?
I don't know if 3 had come out. I don't think so.
No, I
don't
think
3
had come out.
I think 3 had come out... Well, I don't know. I don't want to say, but I seem
think
to
had.
Think it... It did come out at the time that Link's Awakening came out.
Link's
well,
Awakening,
no, Link's
yeah,
Awakening,
not Mario, like Mario Land.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because Link's Awakening, because the early Game Boy games were very like Mario Land. They were very pixely and not cool pixely.
Oh, yeah, it definitely came out a couple years
like
after
squarish.
Super Mario Land.
But then by that time, yeah, because there was
Mario Land came out after Mario 3. Mario 3 was 88, Mario Land was 89.
But wasn't there, like, a Mario reference
sure?
in Link's Awakening? Like, there was some dude with the big nose and... Marin, right? Like, from the first town?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or not Marin, that's the chick.
I think you're right
Her
that.
Dad looked like Mario.
Yeah. You know, I only played Link's Awakening until recently when it came out as a downloadable for the 3DS. And I really liked it, except I'm stuck at this one part where apparently you have to fish. You have to do a lot of fishing. And every time you want to fish, you have to farm for rupees in order to fish. If I don't know if I'm doing it right, but I think that's what I have to do in order to progress. And I just keep screwing up the fishing part, so I'm never able to earn enough money to buy the shovel, which is apparently what I need to proceed. But other than that, it's a pretty good game. I like the fact that you can fish in the game.
Did anybody...
The fish just gives you... I mean, you can get a heart piece from there. You don't have to do that to earn money. You can, like, cut grass, kill enemies, or do whatever else.
Did anybody play Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link? I remember...
Oh, the
I
worst
did.
Game
I
ever made.
Yeah.
The most horrible game created by Nintendo that people love.
I know a lot of people don't like it. I actually loved it. I think it's going to...
Get the fuck out.
It's going to tie into when I talk to Dark Souls later in this podcast, but it was hard as hell. It was, of course, very different. It was, you know, it had leveling up, had experience points. You could learn magic spells, and
there was side scrolling too, right?
It was side scrolling.
Side scrolling was the meat and potatoes of the game, though.
And these palaces that you had to make your way through, and if you died, you know, you go back to the beginning. Like it was all or nothing. Like especially,
you know what? Right now,
especially
I can hear every song from that game. I can hear every single song from that game right now in my head.
The music
in
Zelda 2 was awesome.
It was great. Yeah, it's such a different game, and it's the last really major experience I remember with a Zelda game.
That's just leave.
Especially
behind you and hide there forever.
I was yeah,
the
I
memories
remember,
of Nintendo Fun Club.
I remember being sick a couple of times. I think I might have had the chicken pox or something, and I spending that time home from school just playing through that game, and just like, and occasionally my mom would be concerned about, you know, how frustrated I was getting because I kept dying over and over again. But I eventually
did you
beat
ever
the game.
Get it to glitch out?
I don't remember. I probably did. I played the game enough. I spent a lot of time playing it. But yeah,
I remember I did something somewhere. It was on one of like the swamp. Cause remember whenever you got hit by a guy on the overworld, it would turn into the side scrolling.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember like a slime hit me near a swamp and it was a very swampy area. And then something messed up horribly with my game. And it was like, whatever you do, you would level up whatever it was you were doing. And it just let me level up everything after it. And I just murdered the game after that. It was fantastic. Don't know how it happened, but I remember very specifically it happened at my friend Brandon's house, and I could never get it to do it again.
Your error.
I was error.
You should have reported it to Nintendo Power. You could have been a celebrity and have people call your house.
I know,
and
I could have built a false life over it.
I remember there was a shortage of Zelda 2. I don't know if it was manufactured by Nintendo, the shortage, or if it was a legitimate shortage, but... it made you really want that game. You wanted it so badly, and then I finally saw there was this like maybe this is the same guy, but there was this middle-aged guy that we all knew.
Same
that,
dude,
all,
that yeah, we all knew.
Yeah, a short guy with a mustache. He kind of looked like the Baron from
Crazy
the first
old
Punch
Maurice.
Out. And he had the game, and by the time I got around to seeing it, it just totally killed my desire for the game. He just showed me like 5 minutes of it, and I had no interest in playing it. It wasn't the Zelda that I knew, and it didn't look particularly good on its own, so I never played it. I never actually played Zelda 2.
I mean, at the time that I played it, I mean, there wasn't really an established Zelda thing. I mean, it was
the
it was
first
just
game.
The second, well, I mean,
it was the
there
first
was
game
that,
that
but I mean, that
death.
was it. I mean, as far as I knew, like, and I guess that's sort of what later turned out to be the case. Like, every Zelda sort of redefines the legend, as it were. So, well, I don't know. Is there a Zelda canon, really?
No.
Ganon. Ganon.
You get shot at.
There's no, like, central continuity. I mean, you can't identify all these games in, like,
I think
some
they did.
Time.
Well, I think they did come up with one, and they put it on the Nintendo site or something, but I never read it.
Well, it's like I think the first Zelda might be the most recent escapade of Zelda and Link. In all of these timelines. Maybe. I know Link to the Past is obviously in the past. Oh, Zelda 2 was after Zelda 1.
I think Zelda 2 yeah,
was right
is
after
a direct
Zelda
sequel
1.
To the first
yeah,
Zelda.
Yeah, because Ganon's dead, and they need your blood to bring him back. So that's definitely right after. So Zelda 2 might be the latest.
Yeah. You could conceivably call Link's Awakening a side story. Because, but when is that supposed to take place?
I don't think it really matters all that much, but Link's Awakening, I'm pretty sure, is linked to is linked to the first two Zelda games in terms of timeline. So at some point he went sailing between the two games, and that's when it happened.
Ah, okay.
So is there more than one Link? Because I've said it on the podcast a few times. They're all different Links. It's not the same Link each time, but is it?
They are all. They're descendants of the same bloodline, of the same incestuous, horrible bloodline.
It's a lot of inbreeding.
Yeah.
Link and Zelda just keep on hooking up, and their kids just
get a
marry each other.
Edition.
The one-eyed hunchback Link.
It's like the Habsburg Empire all over again. Wow.
That's why they need the Triforce. The Triforce keeps them from creating inbred kids. You heard it here first.
The Triforce of Wisdom. That's what it does.
All right. What came out after? Oh, it was Link to the Past came out on the Super Nintendo. That was probably the next.
Yes. That was the next.
That
one.
Was one with the,
and that was
they had the rain effect, didn't it?
I think
didn't that?
Yeah,
at the very beginning.
Very beginning.
Yeah, oh my when God. Zelda's talking to you in your dream, and then you wake up and your uncle's not home, and you go outside and it's raining and it's like thundering too.
Yes, it was.
And
serious.
Then
you wake
and
up
it looked
and it's
so
real life.
Amazing. That game looked so amazing at the time.
I love that game.
One of the best games of all time, probably.
Easily, yeah.
Yeah, I played the hell out of that one too, and it was on a borrowed Super Nintendo because I had a Genesis and. I didn't get a Super Nintendo until years later, like after the... I mean, I'm sorry. Years later. And I just borrowed the Super Nintendo, and I just kept it as long as I could just to play that game. I don't know why I just didn't
buy it. Lock the doors, turn the lights off, yeah. No one's home.
I think we had gotten a new TV by then, so I could I could walk around without waking up everybody in the house with my, you know, Zelda fanfare with that old broken TV.
Fanfic.
Yeah, I didn't really play A Link to the Past until after became a part of the...
Oh, my God.
Well, until, you know, years ago, until I came...
I'm learning so many reasons to hate you today.
Until I became a part of the TNL community, and then I picked it up used at a local bookstore. And, because I was a Genesis guy at the time it came out, and I was playing Genesis games, you know, I felt like I had outgrown Legend of Zelda. You know, it was all about, you know, playing Strider, wow. Like the arcade conversion of Strider. You know, that was my favorite game at the time.
I mean, you were in college at the time. So
no, I wasn't in college at the time. I was in, like, I don't know, 7th or 8th grade. I guess that leads into to kind of another question that sort of always comes up with every Zelda game. I just felt like it looked like the same game over again. I know that there were a lot of improvements made to it and a lot of changes made, and other people can speak to those better than I can.
Is there really a difference between, like, all the breasts you've seen, for instance? I mean, they're pretty
exactly.
much the, I mean,
no, but, going with this.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, I mean, a big criticism
kind of the same thing each time.
A big criticism
of
the Zelda games is that it's the same sort of formula every time. Link never talks. I know that Mizo's talked about that some.
Well,
and even up
to the point of Zelda 3, you couldn't really make that claim. Because Zelda 3 was kind of a throwback to Zelda 1, but it kind of invented a lot of the puzzles that... Well, Zelda 1 kind of invented a lot of those puzzles.
By Zelda 3, you mean Super Nintendo.
Yeah, it's the same fucking game, you're right. Link to the Past, yeah. It's the same game.
It's an evolution.
Yeah,
there was just more boomerang in the first game, that was it.
I don't know, Zelda 3 was just miles above what I expected them to do. It just knocked my ass off. I couldn't deal with it. It was so good. Everything about the game was just so good. All the different items
The whole
like,
Dark World
dungeon.
Concept.
And the game goes on forever, too. There's like a million dungeons, and they're all cool.
Yeah,
Zelda
Link to the Past had a purpose. There was a reason for it to be made. It showed off the hardware, and they could do a lot of cool stuff. Something like Twilight Princess, which we'll talk about later, I'm sure, didn't really have a reason to be made, even though I love the game, you know. But
it did have a reason, but it was a bad reason.
Yeah. I mean,
it was that, oh no, the people don't like the amazing look of Wind Waker. Let's placate them by making this kind of realistic Link who only idiots care about. Ugh.
Yeah, well, Zelda, Link to the Past was, I mean, it was the right time for it, and the technology was there. And I think it differentiated itself enough from the original that, I mean, you could play them probably back to back and be satisfied.
I don't like the maps in Zelda games, by the way. Skyward Sword is a good map, but forever, like in Link to the Past and in Ocarina of Time, it's just like a picture of the entire world with no details to it, and then it shows a giant fat Link head in the middle, you are here. And you're like, what? How is this helping me in any way? What is the purpose of this map? I'm in the north.
How do I get over here?
Is there a section? Is there a section in the sea that says, there be dragons? Is it like a medieval-style map?
It's not quite that
No, they big. Just surround it with clouds.
Yeah, it's surrounded by clouds, so you don't know where it is. Somewhere in fake Europe, I'm sure, where all the fantasy takes place.
So if I see something, an app called Zelda GPS, I shouldn't download it because it's not going to be
It's just going to be a giant
picture
of
the U.S.
It's going to be like the state you're in, you know, and then a giant picture of your head in the middle,
you're
smiling, and that's
face.
It.
So why does this, why does this app need permission to access my camera? Oh.
But yeah, no, I think my cousins actually came into town, and they would come in. They're not really my cousins. They're like my mom's friend's sons, but my mom and her friend are so close that they may as well be
Your
my cousins.
Mom has a lot of close friends and cousins, doesn't
yeah.
she?
Okay. Yes.
Chris, did you wrap it up?
What?
Oh, never mind. That was me.
Anyway, they would come from Venezuela like once a year, and they would bring just tons of money from somewhere. Like they would save up money to come to the United States to shop. Like crazy, and then go back to Venezuela with their goods for another year. And one of the big shopping sprees were a bunch of Super Nintendo games, and one of them ended up being Zelda, A Link to the Past. And long after everyone else had fallen asleep, I was still there playing that game. And the next day, they were going to go to another shopping mall, and I'm like, you know what? You guys can go shopping, and I will stay at your the apartment that you're renting. I will stay at the hotel playing Zelda all day long while you guys go shopping. And I did that. And I actually beat it before they came back. And I was like, I'm done. I threw the controller at them. I'm out. I'm going home. It was pretty much the greatest game ever.
Good. You're right. All right.
Yeah.
That seems to be the general
especially
consensus.
That scene where Robert De Niro comes in.
When Zelda 3?
I don't remember.
Like,
him.
Like about Casino.
He played Casino.
I got it.
What are we talking, are we talking about the movie Casino up. Now?
What part was the pin stabbing scene? What was that?
Oh, that was...
I don't know. It's just I play through it, and when I reach random dungeon points, I remember scenes.
It just flashes in front of your eyes.
You fall into a seizure. You're, like, shaking on the ground.
Oh, too soon.
Thinking about Casino. Oh, I see. I see where you went, Chuck.
So, how many years between Link to the Past and the following console installment? It seems like there was a big gap there.
Forever, yeah.
Well, because but that's how Ocarina it
should
be. Of Time was the
special.
Next...
That's exactly how it should be.
That was the next
was it,
console
was it Ocarina?
Game, right?
Yeah, because Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64, they were...
Well, what about
yeah,
the what about the Capcom?
There was Oracle. There was Oracles of Seasons and Ages, but those weren't. I mean, those were just Game Boy games.
Yeah,
just Game Capcom. Boy games.
Come on, yeah, they were Game Boy Color, right?
I know. Yeah, Game Boy Color. They were good though. I'm just saying.
Well, he said console.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, console. Yeah, yeah. That was
pay
a huge
attention,
gap.
Mizzou. God.
Oh, Karina.
I don't listen to you guys when I'm not talking.
I'm sorry. What were you saying? I wasn't paying attention.
Who are you people?
What's going on here?
So, what?
No, it was a good long wait. And like Mizzou said, that's how it should be. You know, you don't want to farm them out like Call of Duty every year.
Yeah,
and in
I pre-ordered a Nintendo 64 with Super Mario, I think 64, mm-hmm. and I pretty much just gave it to my brother because something else was going on in my life. So I said, you know, I don't have time for this. I was going to college with Sleeve. So we were both too cool for Mario games. But
you didn't want to make the same mistake as you did with Lunar.
But then I ended up getting another Nintendo 64 just to play Ocarina of Time, which I probably don't like as much as most people. I mean, on a scale of 100, it's 90 something for sure. But it just seemed like a little drab to me compared to, I mean, Skyward Sword. I think. I'm not even sure. I haven't finished Skyward Sword, but I just kind of even like the environment of Skyward Sword better than I do Ocarina of Time. It just seemed a little drab to me, and something about the art style, or it's just like when you go to a 3D movie and you put the glasses on and the picture looks darker. Mm-hmm. There's just something about it. It just seemed like it should have been brighter on mm-hmm. multiple levels. There was something about Ocarina of Time where I didn't quite hook into it like most people did, even though I loved it.
You know
it.
What was cool was... and then quickly not cool was how huge Hyrule Field was. Like, initially it was pretty cool, and then it very quickly became not cool because you had to, like, roll your entire way around that thing, and it was really annoying.
You have to mash
A. Yeah, yeah, ha, ha, yeah, yeah, ha. Just constantly.
It was like Game of the Annoying Voice Samples. I mean, it definitely was darker than like Link to the Past, just in terms of color. Like mm-hmm. it was, you know, Link to the Past was definitely like lots of bright greens and stuff. I think the only
pink hair. You don't forget Link had pink hair in Link to the Past.
When he turned into a bunny too. Like there was, you know, that like misty forest. Yeah. The furryism. And then certain parts of Dark World, but that was about it. Like it was just a bright game. I don't know. I loved Ocarina of Time when it came out. I'm not sure I could go back to it now. Maybe one day when I get a 3DS, I'll pick it up. But like it was just amazing to me at the time. It was like the perfect transition of that formula into 3D. The lock-on combat was so
mm-hmm.
good.
Oh, yeah. I loved that.
I loved it when you actually became adult Link and you were wielding around like the big-ass
big sword.
Sword,
yeah. The Night and Day cycle was awesome, I thought, at the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there was just
I think
so
a mistake
that
was made, maybe, now that I'm thinking about it, I might be wrong, but remember those big, what were those called, pea hats or whatever, those big oranges with the propellers on
top?
Yeah,
and they were giant in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, I don't think that worked. I think them trying to bring in every every villain from the previous games. I think maybe if they had just gone a little bit different and done something different with the, there's just something about the design where I think they blew it with something. And the pea hats or whatever they're called, they didn't really work for me. And a lot of the villains, it just seemed like they should be doing something different. It's hard for me to place my finger on it. And maybe somebody,
the Stalfos were cool. The Tektites were cool. I liked most of the enemy designs. I really didn't have an issue with it. The Dongos were pretty cool. I guess the levers, a little weird, but whatever.
And Ganondorf or whoever looked like some guy on you, some Pakistani guy on you.
Some Pakistani.
You have to put like the sword in his eye at the end.
Would you call Zelda, would you call Ocarina of Time racist in that respect?
I didn't realize Pakistani was a race, but no, I don't think so.
It is now. So are we. I really liked, not really the normal design of Ganon, but the way he transformed at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I don't know, I just thought that was really nice, because it was like the early Zeldas, Ganon was just fat. He was just a big fat pig.
Big fat pig.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, okay. Like, what do you do? Oh, you fight fat people. Like, you know, that's your ultimate nightmare in this world. Right. And then in Ocarina, like, they had Ganon turn into, like, this huge, gigantic demon after you beat him during the normal sequence.
Spoilers.
And that was really great. That was actually the one thing that kind of disappointed me about Wind Waker, was that Ganon was a giant marionette puppet at the end.
That was kind of weird. I kind of didn't like that, too.
Yeah, the rest of the game was really great, but it was like, when I got to that, like, I was expecting kind of the evolution of that demon Ganon just done better.
Yeah, well, we're not there yet.
But instead, he was just like,
yet.
Balls.
Our boat hasn't arrived yet. Or has it?
Everything was about cool. Every Zelda game.
So is Ocarina, has everybody here played Ocarina?
I'm playing through it now. I'm about like 5 hours into it.
So you just started it.
Yeah. All right. Of those true gamers at this podcast,
look, I don't play a lot of Nintendo games. All right, that's just what I'm about.
Yeah,
okay?
You just got out of college yesterday. Come on. Is Ocarina everyone's favorite? Or
I don't know.
The top two or three?
It's
is it top
favorite,
three for everybody?
It was at the time.
It's top three. It's
I don't know. Like I guess I've played. Yeah, I guess I could play a. Let's say at this point I played three Zelda games, and I would say Zelda 2 is my favorite. So,
Zelda 2
screw all y'all, okay? No, but I really like it. I know it's different from the rest of the series. I feel like the series sort of, you know, seems to have like fallen into the formula to the extent that people criticize. Formula that Zelda's fallen into. It seems to have crystallized around the time that Ocarina of Time came out. So, you know, the series wasn't quite as defined when Zelda 2 came out. And I just like the gameplay in Zelda 2. I really enjoyed it for, I think it's defined like a lot of the types of games that I like, I guess.
Fair enough.
Zelda 2.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with having like a main archetype for the series. You just need to spread them out so that each new one has a reason to exist. You know, like you have new hardware, you can do new crazy stuff with it. Then by all means, make a very similar game with just brand new stuff all up in your face, and I will buy it. It will be amazing. But if you are crapping them out every year, it loses whatever it is that made them special in the first place, and you kind of get to see just how similar they really are, and it kind of takes away from it a little bit. And on that note, we should talk about Majora, because it was so different, and it was so good, and how that dude should make more Zelda games, because that was one of my favorites right there.
What was different about Majora's Mask?
Well, I think the main difference...
Everything.
I mean, obviously you have the whole time issue where you basically have 3 days to get everything done, and at the end of those 3 days, the world ends. So you learn the Song of Time to go back in time and start those 3 days over again. So it's kind of like Groundhog Day. You're just living the same chunk of time over and over again.
God, I wish I had the Song of Time when I was playing Star Control.
And I don't even understand that. But then you...
PC game reference.
So like the very first
Yoshi would
hours?
Understand.
Probably.
If you take too long, the universe explodes or something, or the war starts and you can't win.
Yoshi doesn't listen to this.
But like the first 72-hour period is kind of tight. But after that, you learn, or you're supposed to. It hints strongly at the fact that you can twist the Song of Time around in different ways, like change the notes of the song. Play it backwards or play it, I forget, like double notes. I think, so you can either slow down or speed up time. So then your 72-hour period becomes a much longer period because you slow down time. And at that point, there is no excuse for anybody to complain about a time limit in the game because you have forever to get whatever you want done, just basically forever. So it's basically you would start the day, the three-day cycle, you do a dungeon. There's only four dungeons, and then you would finish everything you can do with it. You go back in time, you start again, you go to the next dungeon, you do that. But in between the dungeons, which almost weren't the main draw of the game, was the town, the village, that had so many different characters in it. And really early on, you got a bomber's notebook from this little group of kids called the Bombers who would help people every day. That was what they did, which is ridiculous for kids to do. But you would get this notebook, and you had to get a stamp, like a little stamp of happiness from every person in town by doing something good for them. So you would see their lives in this three-day span, and you know where they go, you know what they do, and something bad kind of happens to almost all of them. So now it's like Quantum Leap, and you have to go in there and change what's bad about their life and make it better. And then you go back in time, and then it's horrible again because you don't interfere with it the second time around. But that one little tiny time period that no longer exists, you made their lives good. And there was one quest that was just huge and involved a bunch of 72-hour periods to complete.
So you're telling me the game would have been better with Scott Baio and Bill Murray?
Scott Bakula.
Scott Baio.
But everything's better with Scott Baio, so I can't disagree. Are you kidding me?
It's true.
But anyway.
Charles in charge, son.
Would have been
also
better
had
with Tingle. Scott Bakula.
Scott Baio as Tingle. Majora's Mask. The movie. But I think what I liked about it is a lot of the things that were hidden. I did complain about this on the forums, where back in the 8-bit days, you know, you bomb a rock, there's a hole underneath, you go inside, you find an item. That's clever for 8-bit. That's like, I am a smart person, and I'm putting puzzles into a horribly limited game, and this is about the best we can do. And back then it was cool. But then Sunless 64, you bomb a rock, you fall in the hole, you find that item, it's like, okay, you know what, I know it's like nostalgic, you're doing it to call back the original Zelda, but you can make better secrets than this. And that's what they did in Majora, because most of the items were gained from small quests from town, basically. So I kind of felt like that was an awesome direction for the series to take. And it kind of has a little bit. Like, Wind Waker had a really nice town. Twilight Princess, I don't remember too much interaction with the townspeople, but maybe a little bit more than usual. And I think they've kind of gone that way a little bit, but I just really like Majora. So that's that.
Majora was definitely cool because it was different. I have never finished it, and I really want to go back to it one day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. I'm absolutely horrible.
Man, all you guys are giving me crap for liking Zelda 2, and you guys are, you know, praising, you know, the different Zelda games, so, you know.
Yeah, that's because these ones are different.
But these are good. These are different good. Not different, like, poop from my butt.
How is that different? What's different about that?
Yeah. Oh, God. But the, yeah, it was just, like, it was neat having that whole time concept. The main thing that I remember about it was the big fucking moon. And just that look on its face as that thing comes down.
I know. It looked like the asteroid. Like, remember that asteroid in Star Fox? It always reminded me of that asteroid with the stupid face in Star Fox.
Yeah.
Fuck that thing.
Yeah. But, I love that moon. It was great. That was actually, like, my primary thing. I got the first song. I don't even remember if I ended up upgrading that song. Like, I know they talked to me about it, and I had to... like, rewind a couple times to dick around with some stuff, but it was just the sort of thing of... I think I played it... Well, I got Ocarina when it first came out, and I got Majora's well after it came out, so I don't know exactly how long it had been, but it was so different from Ocarina that I really didn't like it at the mm-hmm. time, but later on I kind of came to appreciate a lot of what they were going for with that.
Well, I mean, I did the same thing. Like, I played it right after Ocarina when it first came out. Well, not really right after, but I wasn't too into it. I kind of sat there on the first 72 hours for years. I mean, after GameCube came out, I dug out my N64 and I played it on the N64 because I don't like pressing the Z button on the GameCube. And I actually completed it for the first time, and I loved every second of it the second time through.
The N64 did not have the worst analog stick ever.
Well, it kind of does.
That thing is huge, and I absolutely destroyed it with Sin and Punishment. But besides that... Yeah, I don't know. Like, I also kind of like the remix just because they're a little bit clearer. And I think I actually still have that, like, collector's Ocarina and Majora's Mask, so maybe one of these years I'll actually put my Wii to some use and play a GameCube game on it.
Oh, the disc that had the Master Quest too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I sold that for a lot of money. Suckers. And I didn't like Ocarina. You know what? I didn't even beat Ocarina, so there. I couldn't stand it.
Man, this is, what is this? What a podcast of rebels, we're finding out.
It is.
Yeah. Gaming rebels.
I'm hanging out with Sleeve over here talking about stuff that makes no sense.
Just because my opinions are different from yours doesn't mean they don't make sense.
I was just trying to take some of the heat from you and your
diversity makes
radical
us,
idea.
Diversity makes us stronger. That's why we hit a Pakistani Ganon.
That's right. I'm trying to introduce...
love it. Pakistani.
So speaking of differing opinions, I think the next game is probably the most polarizing of all the Zelda games.
This is Wind
Except
Waker,
for Zelda right? 2, which is probably the most polarizing because only horrible people like it. But Wind Waker... It's like I think the real issue with Wind Waker is that Nintendo kind of promised a realistic Link with a little bit of a tech demo early on, and everybody got super excited for that. We're like, oh man, he looks so cool! It's adult Link, you know. Nobody likes little kid Link.
Surprise! You get Punky
Link.
Brewster,
and then you get this amazing looking cartoon Link. I mean, if you turn that game on right now, it'll be 480p on the Wii. You don't have to hold any buttons or anything, and it will look so good on your TV. There'll be a little bit of artifacting, because, I mean, the hardware is just awful. But it'll look so good on your TV. Just the art style is so perfect. The little cloud of smoke when enemies die, like the way the sound changes while you're fighting them, you know, like dun, 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 you know? Like when you're doing your combo and stuff. I know they kind of had that in the newer games, but it's not the same. It's just... I like the combat. I like cutting things off, you know, like you cut the clothes off the dude, like the armor and stuff, and you hit them. And just, I liked everything about that game except for the little bit of the Triforce. You have to kind of fish for it, and that's kind of annoying. Except for that, everything else with the game, magnificent, just amazing game. I don't see why people don't like the way it looks, and I don't see why people don't like the way it plays.
I think it plays fine. I think there's too much... Sometimes you're sailing across the clouds a little too long, or, you know, sailing across from one place to the other.
The shortcuts aren't as useful as they could
be. Right. Other than that, I have no complaints about the game. Problems. It is definitely one of the better Zeldas of all.
Of all time!
Of all
I
Zeldas.
I remember I had a few of my friends were over when I was doing the part where you first get to town and you get a camera, and you have to do these little quests for people in town. And the camera guy asks you for all these weird pictures. Like, there's two people that kind of like each other.
Why don't you pose
catch
for
them
pictures,
in the
little Link? Your hair looks mighty nice.
No. And there's, like, this one moment where you have to capture two people looking at each other who like each other but haven't really done anything about it or have a secret relationship. And so you have to kind of follow people around on their daily routines and find the exact moment to take a picture of. For some reason, everyone in the house was really into that. Like, they were super excited about it, telling me who to look for and where to stand and what to do. I don't know why they were so into these horrible, stupid little quests, but it was great. It was just great. Like, that game, I don't know. I really like that game.
Yeah, I have nothing bad to say about it at all, besides the sailing.
And also the puppet Ganon wasn't that cool. I have to agree with Chris on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I actually did not mind... the fetch quest. A lot of people bitched about that. That little Triforce quest at the end, but I think it, I don't know, it took me like, what, an hour? Just kind of going along and gathering up all the pieces.
Seriously, is there an RPG, any good RPG that doesn't have a lot of fetch quests? I mean, it's part and parcel. It's like saying that, you know, you don't like dealing with stats when you're playing a sports game.
I don't know if I would call Zelda an RPG.
Well...
Maybe Zelda 2 comes the closest.
It's
action-adventure.
It's just the issue that, like, you're going through all this action adventure, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, you have to go fishing for a while. And you know, it's just, I don't know, it's kind of like this weird break to suddenly have in the game and have it be forced in order to finish it. Like, normally, you know, you kind of get the Triforce pieces as you complete the dungeons, and this one was just a go fish for a while. It was just kind of a weird break, but... It honestly didn't bug me that much. I know a lot of people seem to really hate it and like bitch about that, but
well, I think they did a pretty good job of populating the ocean. I mean, it still gave you the feeling of being very sparse and empty, but it had a lot of little landmarks and towers with enemies on it and small island enclosures that would have like a heart piece or something. It was actually fairly well populated for such a giant, vast environment. So I kind of really liked the sailing. I thought they did a very good job with it. And it's kind of impressive the way you can just run to the edge of an island, jump off onto your boat, and then just peace out. And there's no loading in between. There's nothing. And you see the island getting smaller and smaller, and you're just gone, you know? There's something about that that was very impressive at the time, I think.
I mean, it's still nice. I don't think I like the dungeons as much as some of the other games, but
I feel
overall
like they didn't,
it was just...
I mean, that's the one thing I do think it's... I think it only had about 4 major dungeons, and it was kind of short. I think it needed... I feel like they ran out of time, and then they just kind of crammed in the whole Triforce hunt to make up for the fact that there's an entire chunk of dungeon missing, maybe. I kind of feel that's true. I don't know if it's true or not. That's just how I felt playing the game.
I think it's the only Zelda that I can't specifically recall any of the dungeons from. That I've played so far. Like, I haven't played Skyward Sword yet, but all the rest, I can think of dungeons when I think of Wind Waker. I think there was one part where you use a leaf to kind of, like, fly around. And that's all I
can. Isn't that Twilight Princess with the air temple or whatever, where you're flying up on...
There is a leaf. You have, like, the tree gives you a leaf in Wind Waker, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's
because you can control
that's
the air.
All I got.
You can control the air. With the wand.
The only reason I think I even remember that is because there. Wait, was it that one where you could collect the little figurines?
Yes, that was the one, and that took for freaking ever because you only can hold three pictures on your goddamn camera or something.
Yeah,
close
like
to that.
I didn't collect them, but I remember trying to hunt one of them down while floating around. It's the only thing I got on dungeons in that game. I love the ocean. The ocean was great in that. I like the city. I mean, obviously the art style is amazing. The smoke was so fucking good. Yeah, like when you actually go under in that one, actually, was that a temple? The underwater temple where you see like the past links.
Like old Hyrule?
And stuff.
No, that wasn't even a temple, I don't think. That was just like a little event place.
Yeah, like that was really cool. That whole area.
That was really amazing. That's right at the end, though. And then you've been riding the King of Hyrule all along. What? Treating him like a chump. That was good.
Yeah, he's the King of Hyrule.
So we're just spoilering every Zelda. He's the boat. The end. Tetra Zelda. It's over.
I think at this point, if you haven't played Wind Waker,
you're an asshole. Yeah,
right.
I agree.
You should deserve to know that the King is a boat. Not that that is really... A huge spoiler.
And you stab Ganon in the forehead with your sword. It's probably the most violent act in the history of Zelda titles. You're this cute little tiny Link with this cute little tiny Zelda fighting Ganon, and then you just jump in the air and stab him in the forehead with your sword, and he turns to stone. Job well done.
Well done, Link. Well done.
Well.
Yeah.
All right. So, from Wind Waker, we have... We have your favorite, Mizo.
Werewolf's favorite.
Twilight Princess.
That's why we don't hear from Werewolf anymore, because Twilight Princess came out, and it was a Zelda game, and it had, like, fox and wolf stuff in it. He's done. I think he died from autoerotic asphyxiation while playing this game. And that's... Actually, he has posted recently, I think, so he's not dead.
Yeah, he did.
That was in my TNL fan fiction. That's how it went down. There's nothing wrong with Twilight Princess. I just
Twilight Princess is a very well crafted game. It's a very well crafted. There's nothing wrong with it technically. It's kind of got the Ocarina thing for me, where again, I love Twilight Princess. It's 90 something out of 100 for sure, easily. But it just didn't seem to have a reason to be. It's just we need another Zelda game. Wind Waker was fine, and then Skyward Sword is fine. They both seem to have something new to bring to the table.
Right.
But Twilight Princess, when I was playing, it was almost like, these are Link's greatest hits. This is all the stuff that we are really good at. We know how to do this stuff. This has dropped your jaws in the past. So here it is again. And it didn't help that it was kind of that between generations, caught between the GameCube and the Wii. But it just seemed like
I think it was just...
it's a great first Zelda to play because it kind of introduces you to everything. It's almost a quintessential Zelda game, but if you played the series and you were hoping for something that took it a little bit further or that took it a little bit deeper, this wasn't it. It was just a very proficient and very it was a very technically sound Zelda game.
Do you feel like that? Do you feel like Twilight Princess came out as kind of an obligation for Nintendo to take yes. the Zelda series to the perceived next level?
I was there when they announced it, and the place went crazy, including me. We went crazy for the game. But so if you have something like that up your sleeve and you're in a heated console war, you play that card, you know. It was played because it's a smart thing to do. But from a gaming perspective, it is one of the Zeldas where, you know, if it had been skipped, I don't think I really would have missed anything except, you know, that experience while I was playing it. It was a lot of fun. But in the grand scheme of things, if we had just gone from Wind Waker to Skyward Sword, I probably would even enjoy Skyward Sword even more. So I don't think I would have lost anything in the grand scheme of things. And well, I would have gained like 70 hours back.
The world would have lost the Gaijin for Koma picture of the guys, you know, like looking super bored in the Nintendo conference and then getting all excited. And then, do you remember that thing where people would just stick pictures in between? The world would have missed out on that, and that's one of the funniest things ever. So I'm glad that the game was made in the end. But I have to agree that if you cut that out, then their game release schedule is almost perfect for console Zeldas. You know, just a major one when a new upgrade is required because of a new either technology advancement or control scheme or something similar. So that would have been perfect. And I also didn't like the fact that they held it ransom because it was ready for GameCube super early. And they just held it for almost a year, so it would come out with the Wii with just butchered controls, which I've mentioned before. I cannot stand that. I waited. I mean, I bought it first day. I played a little bit. The reason I gave was fake. I said that I played a little bit and I hated the controls and I stopped playing. That's not true. I actually liked the game enough that I kept playing until I got to about the snow palace, I think, the mansion. And I was actually enjoying it. And then my friend John came over.
Oh, where you have to push the ice blocks and stuff?
Yeah, and then my friend John came over and I had just gotten the because Nintendo didn't even offer a freaking component cable when the system came out. I hate them so much. I had to order it from the internet from them, and it took forever to show up. And I have been playing this game looking like, with the component cable, it looks bad. Without it, it looks like the muddiest garbage in the world. And I was still playing it because I was having fun. And I got to the Snow Temple, and I plugged in the cables, and I was like, let me see what the game looks like from the beginning without looking like garbage. And this is the only Zelda game that I can recall off the top of my head where you don't choose a save file at the beginning and then have that be the save file you save to at the end. You know, like in Zelda 3 or Link to the Past or Ocarina of Time, you choose a save file up front and then you play your game and then you just hit the save button and it's saved to that slot. But in Twilight Princess, when you hit save, you have to pick where to save your game to. And I don't know why they would do that. And I overwrote my save. And I stared at it for a while. And because John and I were heading out to the arcade to play Street Fighter or something or other, and I was really quick. Let's take a look. Let me show you the game. Okay, I'm going to save, and then I'm going to leave. I don't know why I would save from the beginning, but I did, and just overwrote my file, and I'm like, I'm done. I'm done with this game. It's over. And then when the GameCube version came out, I played through that, and I enjoyed it a great deal more because of camera controls. Better controls overall because a Wii control is horrible with the stupid button placement and no waggle.
Yeah.
So I loved the GameCube one. And they're bastards because they made it non-widescreen, you know, just because.
GameCube one. I fucking hate that.
They're like, fuck you guys. It's not widescreen on GameCube. Enjoy.
Yeah. Did I tell you about, like, my seizure experience with Twilight Princess?
I don't know. Maybe.
That I felt like it was... The way I would play Twilight Princess is, you know, because they only just mapped waggle, it doesn't actually matter what the hell you do.
Right.
I usually aimed the Wiimote at the screen, like just holding the controller in front of my crotch, and I would drape my left arm over the armrest where I had the, I can't remember what it's called, the dongle. And so
it's getting dirty.
You shake the one in order to try and attack. So I'd be sitting there and like shaking my right hand really hard to attack, and then if I also wanted to try and get off a circular attack whenever I could, I'd be shaking the left one at the same time, and so I'm just sitting there, shaking both of these controllers really hard in my hand, praying to God that no one walks in on me while I'm doing this.
It's more embarrassing than masturbation.
Is it more embarrassing than playing Oat Medius Excellent?
Almost.
Yes.
It's less embarrassing than liking Zelda 2.
Ooh.
I do.
You know what? Yeah. I do like the Wii controller for the fact that you can hold it with your hands on either side of your body, you know? So you have the Wiimote on one hand and the analog stick and the other stuff on the other. And it does make it very comfortable. I do like having them spread out like that.
Wait,
that's kinda
where
neat.
Did the seizure come in? Did I miss something?
It's just him shaking his hands.
Oh. Yeah, you just kind of have to imagine like someone sitting there like just shaking both their hands like really hard, and, you know.
Well, I had trouble with the controls for Twilight Princess. I couldn't do the shield bash reliably. I don't know if that's just me, but I could not do the shield bash reliably.
I think it was kind of shitty.
Yeah, and then once I got the GameCube version, I mean, everything was perfect. Everything was perfect. And I'm like, yes, this is how it should be.
You know what else fixes that? Using an emulator and mapping all the waggle back onto digital controls.
Of course, because that's all they did. I mean, they seriously put no thought into the motion controls. And this is back when Nintendo was still fooling people with the Wii. They were like, you know, this is the motion you do for bowling. Watch the little tutorial. And you don't have to do that motion. That motion's for you to make you feel like the system's doing more than it's really doing. All you have to do is just, you know, like tilt it forward a little bit and it works. So it's not like a one-to-one relationship, which a lot of the older people and little kids that had the system imagined the system to be. And then when Wii Motion Plus came out, they were like, isn't that what it does? It's like, no, 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 my friend. It used to do crap and now it does it for real and it's still not as good. So anyway, I hate the Wii.
Yeah.
Anywho.
I mean, I really enjoyed Twilight Princess, but I definitely agree that it came out at a weird time. It really felt like it needed more time in the oven, basically. Like, it was just shitty tacked-on waggle controls. And it was like this odd time of transitioning hardware, but, you know, didn't really take advantage of either hardware. It was like,
Well,
this doesn't really seem to belong on the GameCube, but it's not really good enough for the Wii.
Or hey, Nintendo.
But I did like a lot of things they did with
it. Or hey, Nintendo, why don't you not make a Zelda right now and come up with a new property? You know, make up a new mascot or a new...
Yeah,
new
like
world.
Zelda Party.
No, not like that. No. No,
like
something
Pikmin.
New. Like,
the last thing they did that was awesome, that was Pikmin,
yeah.
And it was great, mm-hmm. And it came out of nowhere. Do that again, you know? They can do it.
We need to take Miyamoto all over, because he came up with Pikmin while eating soup or something, right? And he came up with Zelda while looking at a cave. And
take him to
there
a strip
was, there was Animal Crossing, too. Yeah, that was kind of
Oh, that was the strip.
Oh, my God. Animal Crossing is the ultimate extension of releasing the same goddamn game over and over again. I mean, like, exactly the same game and making people pay for
angry.
It. I do get angry. I stop buying them. I enjoy them, but I stop buying them pretty quickly.
Fool me six times. Shame on me.
I have the GameCube one and the DS one, and that was enough. But wait, one more thing about Twilight Princess I wanted to bring up is I know that for the Game Boy Zeldas, at least Capcom and Nintendo had a very close relationship. Mm. They let them have the Zelda property, after all. So I don't know how close they are or how involved the people who make games are with each other. But when did Okami come out and when did Twilight Princess come out? Because the beginning of Twilight Princess, like the first three mandatory things you have to do before the real game starts, it's like you're running around the world covered in twilight and you have to find glowy little things to put on your glowy thing catcher that looks kind of like a grapevine. And when you finish doing that, then the place lights up and it's back to normal. And in Okami, you're running around looking for glowy things that you put in your glowy thing catcher, lighting up the world from darkness to light. I mean, and you're a wolf doing it. It's almost identical. How did that happen? And I'm pretty sure it was the same year they came out.
I think Okami came out in 2006.
Do you think that's a coincidence or... Something must have happened. They're way too similar in that respect, in my book.
I don't know. I have no idea. I played Okami, but I never played Twilight Princess, so I can't compare.
You are. Shut up. Leave.
Like I said, I'm a Sega person, not a Nintendo person.
Can we get security in here?
In this virtual room?
I don't know.
I hauled away.
I swear, somebody swapped notes. Somebody did something. There's no way that two people independently thought of a wolf collecting things to bring a work from darkness to light. Or unless it's based on some kind of Japanese legend that I don't know about.
Like enslaved wolves.
Like the whole Sengoku thing, right?
I think it is, at least to some extent. But just that two major games following the same concept would come out fairly, you know, fairly similar time frames.
Yeah, and they're both Zelda, quote-unquote, games, you know? Like very Zelda-ish games.
Yeah, like Okami is definitely a Zelda-inspired adventure game. But, mm-hmm. I don't know, for Nintendo to then do kind of the same thing.
It's kind of weird.
Know.
And I mean, Capcom and Nintendo were good friends. They probably still are. You're getting Monster Hunter on the Wii, for God's sakes, and for no freaking good reason. So,
you know, because the Wii is known for its online capabilities.
And for its hardcore crowd of people that can handle a game like Monster Hunter. Nobody, your uncle and your aunt and your freaking grandma and little Billy does not want to play Monster Hunter. Let me tell you right now, because it's the worst game ever made.
So,
and it's
but in true
the
Monster Hunter
game.
Fashion, it comes bundled with a controller that works for the game.
Right.
Just like
nice.
It will for the 3DS. Because it's like, you know what? The console we're releasing this for doesn't actually work with our game.
Exactly.
We have to give you a controller that will support it.
And you know what I hate about extra controllers for the Wii? You have to plug them into your stupid Wiimote. You have no idea how crazy that makes me. I think that's the most inelegant, ugliest freaking setup you can have for controllers.
Tape them together.
It's so... I don't know why. I think it's so stupid. It just drives me insane to have to do that.
It is pretty dumb.
Well, you gotta remember, back in the day, there was, like, the GameCube 5 or whatever that Capcom was doing for Nintendo. And that was, like, what? Resident Evil 0?
Piano 3?
Piano
3. Piano 3!
Killer 7.
Well, let's talk
about
that.
We started talking about the Nintendo, the Megaton, and the GameCube 5. I think that means we've probably exhausted our discussion of Zelda, except for the new game, which we'll talk about.
Which
I know some of us
playing
have played.
Section.
But yeah. I think we're ready to talk about what we've been playing. Are we ready to move on to that? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Why don't we start with the people that have been playing Zelda? Let's turn it around here, and then we can get a smooth transition.
Okay.
Mizzo, I know, has been playing it.
Yep.
And does this Zelda have a reason to exist? Are you glad this was made? Does it seem like a cash grab or a strategic thing, or did they just say, we have some ideas for a good game, let's make it?
If this game had come out instead of Twilight Princess,
mm-hmm.
maybe even a year after Twilight Princess came out, like if there was no Twilight Princess, this game came out maybe a year after the Wii first came on the scene, then it would be perfect, I think.
I totally
like a perfect
agree.
Showcase of the system, a perfect showcase of what the game should be like and will be like in the future. But what we're getting is this is probably the best game the system has had at the complete ass end of its life. Like I don't even think Nintendo will make another Wii game at this point. And it's a little bizarre that they've waited this long for a game this good on the Wii. You think that they would be at the forefront. Let me show you how to make a Wii game so that you can copy it and also make good games. And I'm a little disappointed, but it is a very good game. It's a lot of fun to play. And the only drawbacks are all technical aspects of being on such ancient hardware. And you almost can't fault it for that, but I will definitely fault it for
that.
Oh,
you definitely
can. I say that it looks like garbage, and I hate it. But it is a very, very good game that is a lot of fun to play. I love the way it uses the Wiimote. I like the motion controls. I actually like it. I like it so much. It's weird. I really
do. Well,
it
seems like your take is a lot more positive than it was the last time. So.
Well, I put a little bit more time into it. I mean, it's just a very good game.
Yeah, you are skeptical
well
when you first start.
You were
you're
very
skeptical.
Critical, yes. I remember.
Well, I don't think I like the overworld design that they're taking with a little bit of a puzzle element to almost every ass area, because it does makes the overworld feel a little bit less natural and flowing and a bit more constructed. Like every single room is built a certain way, and I mean obviously it is, it's a video game, but you know what I mean, just
it's very segmented. You don't get this feeling of even though when you first start up in the clouds you're in these little areas, and then you learn that there's this whole surface beneath, but when you access the surface, you can only access little puzzle pieces of the surface. You know, you can access one desert or, one little desert and one little jungle area and one whatever the other area is. You can just, mm-hmm. you can only go to them if you go back up to the sky. If you want to go from one area to the other, you have to go back up to the sky and then go over to a certain geographical point in the cloudscape, and then go down to Earth from there. It's kind of a weird thing, but it works within the context of the game, right. And they explain why you have to do it that way.
But it kind of feels like the sky is the real overworld, and it's incredibly sparse. There's maybe three things to do there,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of wish they had added a few more islands with just random secrets or random things on them. I mean, why not? You know? And then it feels like going down to the surface is almost going to a dungeon in and of itself.
Yeah.
Like, I keep thinking, okay, this is the dungeon, and then it's not.
It's meant to
and
be like
okay,
that,
now I'm in a dungeon, but I'm not.
It's I think like, it is okay, meant to be like that. You do have a dungeon feel, and then there are dungeons within the dungeon. So it is kind of new. I kind of don't like the, you know, all the bats in this area are electric, and then all the jellies are electric, and then you go over here, and all the bats have fire powers. If, you know, they don't really need to stick to that such a literal thing, you know. They could, I think they got a little lazy with that, but it doesn't have all the old Zelda villains like I was talking about with Ocarina.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, how creative is it to have bats as enemies? And, you know, it's
well, bats
jellies.
Are Zelda enemies. What are they called? Skeevies?
Keys?
Bats, I believe, are our natural enemies as human beings.
No, we need to leave them
we
alone.
Can't stop
man.
Here. This is backcountry.
We need to leave them alone. Let Mother Nature take care of them. Anyway, I'm really having fun with this game. I like the look of it. I like the feel of it. It's just a bright, open world full of possibilities. It does get kind of bottlenecked when you're going down to the surface. It does make it feel narrow because you have to go through this little hole in the clouds in each case. So it does make it feel like it's kind of compressed when it doesn't need to be. But there's a lot of things to keep you busy. I don't know how many worlds there are. I'm only on the third one. So I don't know if there's like an ice world or something after it. But if they could get a little far away from the cliches in the next time and just try to do something just that feels more organic and mm-hmm. I hate to use this word with Zelda, but more real, more realistic in a way. I think that's the next thing they could do. I don't want it to be realistic as far as, you know, Link looks like he's digitized or something. But I do want it to feel like the real world.
Nick, did you get to play the Wii U tech demo?
No.
For the new Zelda?
Unfortunately,
the new Zelda little thing?
I pretty much had a choice, the Vita or the Wii U, and I went with the Vita.
Oh, it's over. Yeah, of course. But, I mean, that I don't know if that's going to be the future of Zelda, because they've already done the old Sucheru with Wind Waker in the past. But I've heard the technical demo looks pretty gorgeous.
I trust Nintendo.
I'm a little excited.
I trust that the next Zelda is going to be spectacular. They all are at least very, very good.
Yeah.
But this one, I really like this.
I don't think you can doubt
that.
Sorry. You go.
And I kind of don't like, you know, the bowling aspect with the bombs, but I mean, it fits okay. in. It's something new to do. And sometimes I feel like I'm just being lazy with my arm. And, you know, sometimes you do have to slice enemies a certain way to kill them, which I think is a really good thing. Really brings me to the game. But yeah, like you said last week, yeah, I'm just laying back on the couch and I don't particularly feel like leaning forward so I can get a nice, you know, arc or a nice mm-hmm. accuracy to the angle I'm attacking at. But that's just me being lazy. That has nothing to do with the game design. A couple things I was disappointed in. The manual, I know we shouldn't talk about this, but why do we even have a manual? The manual has nothing in it. Absolutely nothing. All the tutorials are in the game. I mean, back in with the original Legend of Zelda, I remember there was a little bestiary or whatever they're called. They're like little mm-hmm. little drawings
yeah,
and descriptions
had a
of each write-up monster.
Of every single
yeah, that
enemy.
Is cool.
Yeah, that was great.
And it wouldn't take that long to do. I could write up descriptions in one evening, and I'm sure people that are talented with drawing could draw pictures like that in one or two evenings.
Is there an online manual? I know a lot of games are doing this now, especially on the 3DS.
No.
Every game has an online manual that you can even access from the 3DS.
You don't even have to do new drawings for the manual. You just take the concept art from the game that you have been developing for the past 5 years and you stick it in there, you know? Mm. That's not that tough.
And I kind of don't... some of the other things I noticed... there's a toilet in Zelda now, and we found out that Link pees while sitting down. We found that out about Link. There's a toilet in the very first academy where you start. And then there's this item check
there's
girl.
There's a toilet in Majora.
There's this item check girl that... I wanted to ask you guys that have played this. There's an item check girl in the bazaar, and it seems to me that she's making kind of like little sexual innuendos, and I refuse to believe that there's something like that in Zelda, but she starts saying stuff like that you think, okay, this is just me being dirty. Like, you know, is there anything you want me to hold? Do you want to leave anything with me? But then she starts saying things. Yeah.
That's not dirty.
And she starts saying things like, is there something in your pouch today that you want to deposit or something you want me to pick up? And I really think that they're trying to get a little bit of adult humor in it, or am I just
I think it's you.
Just a pervert, aren't I? It's too much time with with the Zelda 2 uncle guy with the porn mustache. But yeah, I don't want Zelda real like that. And then when at one point when you toward the beginning of the game when you win that big contest and you get to go up on the mountain with Zelda or go up to the goddess statue and do the ritual.
Yeah, that was cute.
There's a point somewhere in there where you're on a bird and she jumps on the bird with you. And she just has, when she looks up at you, she has such crazy psycho girlfriend eyes. I mean, didn't you get creeped out by that? It's like every girlfriend that wouldn't let go.
It was perfect.
Oh, Link's having some flashbacks.
Link, you're the world to me. And oh my god, I gotta stop playing for a while. But other than that, I mean, this is definitely one of the best Zelda games I've ever played, and that's high praise.
She fucking loves shoving you off places. That's her fucking hobby, knocking you off high places.
Yes. And Link's hobby is depositing things from his pouch into.
I don't know, I haven't talked to the item check girl lately, but
I talk to her every chance I get.
I think it's
you can go to her house at night. It's great.
Oh, what was up with that? I mean, I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, but this is very early on in the game. You're getting led by Fi to go do whatever it is you're gonna do, and that stupid, I don't know if it's the same one, maybe there's a bunch of these meerkats around, but why does it have like this horrible face and yell at you and it makes this whole scary scene and then it attacks you?
You don't know this?
And then you hit it and it cowers away?
Okay, listen carefully. This is an important part of the game. The world, the sky world, is different from night to day in a way that our world isn't. It really, all at night, everybody tends to stay in their homes because even the little furry cats, they start to turn evil. And you walk down the streets where it's totally safe during the day. You have things attacking you, almost like in a dungeon at night. And supposedly monsters come out of caves, they say. And I guess they just mean the bats and things flying around. But even the little cats, one of the instructors that's watching Zelda's cat tells you if you go in there at night, the cat's not in there. And he's got a little cat gym and everything in there. But the cat's not in there. And he says, I keep my distance from Mia at night because... she came in through the gates once at night and she caused a commotion. It's just this whole thing that happens at night. Weird. Night is a really dark place over there. So pay attention.
Huh. All right.
Well, how far are you? I'm like 25, 26 hours in.
I still haven't put that much time into it.
I'm still on
we'll
the original charge of the batteries that came with the Wiimote. So they keep the sword spirit you have or whatever her name is. She keeps interrupting me to tell me Link, your Wii remote is about to die. The battery's about to die. Like she'll keep flashing that icon and she'll keep making that alarm sound until you answer her. And when you answer her, she says, yeah, your battery's about to die. As if the giant red flashing battery in the corner of the screen wasn't enough of an indication.
That's a very Nintendo thing.
Yeah.
Galaxy did the same thing.
Yeah.
Pretty annoying.
So that's that. I haven't played anything else this week, by the way, so I don't know if you have.
Well, I'm sure all of you are spending Thanksgiving week with your families, so hopefully you have been spending the entire time playing video games.
Yeah, with Zelda and her dad and the instructors
and
Hibbit or whatever
that
his name
have
is.
No name.
Yes.
They're such an integral, like you bond with them from the beginning and you know you love them so much. I love that scene at the beginning when Link is looking up and Zelda's talking about his bird. And the King of Hyrule is like, oh, they had this amazing connection. Even you were jealous.
Yeah.
And it shows Link looking up and he has this huge smile on his face. He's like, man, I love my bird. Like that's, I don't
Do you
know.
Think Avatar
I thought it was
somehow
really
influenced
funny
this
at
game?
The beginning. Yeah, you know what? Somebody brought that up, and I didn't even think about it, but I think it's a little true. The whole, I think it's like Hogwarts mixed with Avatar. You have like the school in the sky where they play Quidditch, or at least they try to capture a Snitch, and you're riding on birds that you have incredible bonds with, like the animals in Avatar. I don't know if Miyamoto went to the movies this past year and got inspiration.
Maybe if Link had a ponytail that kind of that he has to attach
that
to
hooked
her.
Into the
yeah, then maybe
he doesn't use his ponytail, let's put it that way.
Oh god. Anyway, Mizza, have you played anything else besides
I actually
well tell
put
us
a little
about
bit
it.
Of time okay I put some time into Uncharted 2 finally, so I got to turn that on and play it a little bit, and I was expecting to be I had heard so much hype about the opening scene and how incredible it is that I think it went my expectations were way too high. Because while it is very exciting and cool, it wasn't as action-packed as I expected it to be. It's kind of a slow climb up a train that is hanging off a cliff while his guts are pouring out of his stomach, which I don't really understand how he pulled off. And then there's, like, the one thing of you running and jumping, and that's kind of action-oriented. I expected the whole thing to be, like, the end of Full Throttle, where it's just action, 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 crazy action, you know? And it kind of wasn't. But it was still very well done, and I am really enjoying the game. It's I really like the beginning because he objects to killing people, and I'm like, really? Come on, Drake.
Sure.
You know, you kill people every day.
Killing my first guy was a big step for me. I can understand where he's coming from.
I guess the guards were kind of innocent, but then you get to a part where there's one patrolling the roof, and you throw him off the roof, and he falls down like thousands of feet into some ocean.
Into feathers, a pile of feathers.
No, and then this is the funny part. It's like he's like a dot in the distance. But you can see him land and then swim away. Like, I'm okay, guys. I'm
That's
alive.
That's used to be in the 80s.
It's like the A-Team.
You know what? That reminded me. I was about to say, that reminded me of this one scene that I can't get out of my head when I used to watch the A-Team. When I was little, I used to watch the A-Team all the time. And then as an adult, I found it on Netflix. And, of course, I had to watch it again. And the show is cartoon character awful. Levels of writing and just zaniness. And I think the best part is that they never kill anybody. In a show about guns and machine guns and tanks that shoot 2x4s and Mr. T, nobody dies on screen.
It's even worse because that's a TV show on Channel 5 or, you know, on NBC back in the 80s. But even the action movies, a lot of them in the 80s, the hero would take a bazooka.
Not like Commando.
He'd hit the tank head on with a bazooka blast, and then he would keep going. And it was so important that the camera had to cut back and show the soldiers scurrying out of the empty husk of the tank. Oh, nobody was killed. The evil Russians weren't killed. Guys.
But see, that leads right to my point for the A-Team, because the one scene I'm talking about is Hannibal and the rest of the gang are escaping Las Vegas in a, I don't remember if it was a limo or some kind of fancy car, it may have been a limo, and the limo is just loaded with weapons. And Hannibal comes out of the top window and shoots at his pursuers in another car. I don't remember, I think it might have just been a machine gun or something special, but he shoots the crap out of the car. The car goes off the road and then just ramps off, flips over in the air and lands on its top. And the car is crushed beyond all recognition. Nobody inside could have survived. But they take the time to pan the camera over to the car.
I love it.
And they have the actors doing, like, I don't know what it's called, but they do the voiceover, like, a week after the production has ended. And they're like, are you okay, Bill? Yeah, I'm all right. And it's like, what? Where did that come from?
We've learned the error of our ways. And we'll become
It's been years since I've seen the A-Team, but I remember that. I distinctly remember that.
You're like, those guys are dead. Those guys have no heads. They are dead. It's over. And then it's like, are you okay, Bill? Yeah, I'm all right. Really. So that's what this was like, because Drake kills people all the
time. Did you finish Uncharted 3?
No, I've never played it. I'm playing 2,
Oh, I thought
dude.
You played 3, because when I was talking about the punching tutorial at the beginning, you seemed to be familiar with that.
Oh, I've seen it. Oh, I mean, okay. I watched it, but I didn't really do it.
I did. I was talking about
it. Oh, it was you? Okay, so, I mean, is Uncharted 2 just better all the way through? Because I'm starting to get the feeling with Uncharted 3 that it's a great game. Like Ocarina of Time, where it's just there's just something that's not making it click where it should be clicking.
I still haven't gone back to it since then, but I do know that the patch came out, I think, today to fix the aiming.
It's out.
So there's that.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
Well, 2 feels like 1. A lot of people said 2 stepped it up. 2 feels just like 1 to me. I don't see a big difference.
Wait,
I mean, I loved 1, but it seems to be about the same.
How far into it are you?
I'm in the cave with my Inuit friend, Jorge. I call him Jorge. He doesn't have a name.
No, we're talking about the game. How far into the game?
Yeah. So it's like this weird ice cave. I just saw that unkillable monster for the first time. And I just like how ridiculous the climbing is in this game. Like in Prince of Persia, it's kind of ridiculous, but it has nothing on Uncharted. Uncharted has the most unrealistic
really
climbing
ridiculous.
Of any game. And he's a master of leaving a platform right before it crumbles.
Yeah.
You know, like the second before it crumbles, he just left it, no matter how long you sit there and wait. And everything is, I mean, it's very
It always
well
reminds
done.
Me of Dragon's Lair when in the one part where you're going down tube on a platform and it stops at every at 3 different levels and you can jump off at any one. And then he jumps off and the bridge crumbles beneath him and he gets off just in time. And that's that's the entire game of Uncharted. That happens over and over and over again. So what thrilled me back then is just like, this happens every 4 seconds in this game.
And he falls down a lot. He gets hurt. Drake is not enjoying.
He's got
this
an
game.
Adamantium skeleton, I think.
He's amazing. I don't know how he's still alive.
Well, one of the main things that really struck me about the improvement in Uncharted 2 is that it definitely like plays almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
But one thing is that you're constantly moving through new areas, and it's like you encounter a group of guards, and you will fight off like four or five people and keep moving on. And the first game used to lock you into a room for a long period of time.
And then it was just a shooting gallery for
waves.
And you
have
to just memorize where they're
coming
from to be able to take them out, or else they come up behind you and then you're screwed. Yeah.
Right, like it basically just turned into a glorified light gun game for like 10 minutes, and then you would move to the next room, and then, you know, it would happen again. You'd get locked. Oh, and there's a Jeep in front of you in rocks, and even though you're outside, you're still somehow locked in a room fighting waves of enemies, and then you move to the next section. I hated that. Uncharted 2 just has much better pacing, and it flows a lot nicer.
I was a little surprised at the beginning when Drake just kind of accepts casually to go rob something for somebody else. I didn't have that part of Drake in my subconscious, in my image of him, let's say, from playing the first game. Like, I knew he was kind of a treasure hunter, and he goes out of the way to discover things. Like, kind of this is kind of Indiana Jones 1 to Indiana Jones 2 type of thing. Where in part 1, it's like he's an archaeologist first, you know, everything belongs in the museum or whatever. Also in part 3, more famously in part 3. And then in part 2, it's kind of like, I found this mummy, you know, I'm going to trade it with this gangster for money, and we're going to do, me and Short Round are doing everything for fortune and fame, which kind of was like a, you know what I mean? It was kind of like a turnaround for Indiana Jones. How I felt when I turned on Uncharted 2, because he was just like, like this one dude shows up and he's like, hey, you want to rob some shit? He's like, hell yeah, let's do it. I'm Drake. That's what I do. I'm like, really? That's what Drake does? Because he gets away with a lot of illegal crap in the first game, like mass murder and also like just taking things. But I mean, he's taking things from the ocean. From like, you know, it's another government.
Is it a prequel kind of like
Heroes?
It was just weird. I just thought it was weird. I thought it came out of nowhere that he is this dirty, filthy thief.
First, you learned that Eric Munch didn't beat Zelda 2, and then you learned that that Drake is not as moral, and Indiana Jones not as moral. And I'm so sorry.
Oh, and I did beat Zelda 2, by the way. That was the second quest.
I'm sorry,
the second quest.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's what
it's more impressive.
That's what
to
I consider
Zelda
to be too. Zelda 2, because I block out the actual Zelda 2 link.
Well, Zelda 2 is a lot harder than Zelda 1, even the second quest of Zelda 1.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You just want bragging rights.
Right.
So Uncharted 2, so far it's very, very good. I guess I just got to the part where there's monsters instead of people now, so I'll see how it goes from here on out. But really enjoying it. I'm just getting ready to play part 3 eventually, basically.
Cool.
Yeah.
And Eric, I understand your Dark Souls epic is continuing.
Yes. There were a couple days.
What trouble have you gotten into this week?
Yeah, Thanksgiving has been an abbreviated gaming week for me because of the Thanksgiving holiday. But still been playing Dark Souls. I'm to the point where a lot of people got really frustrated and furious with the game. I'm in a place called Blight Town, which is filled with. Just by the name Blight Town, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's a shitty place to be. But it's filled with poison swamps and people who shoot toxic blow darts at you, and there's all sorts of rickety platforms. The place is not well lit. People can knock you off very easily. But I just want to...
Do they crumble as soon as you jump?
In parts they do, and it's pretty freaky. But... I'm going through it slowly, and I haven't found it quite as bad as a lot of people do. I think what I really appreciate about it, and you know, every aspect of the game seems that way, is that the more I play it, I just think to myself, you know, why can't every RPG be like this? Like, why can't every RPG, like, especially with Skyrim, you know, eventually I'm going to play that. In some ways I'm not looking forward to it after spending so much time with Dark Souls. But, like, the combat system, like, it's got stats. It's got, like, vitality and endurance and strength and dexterity and all those things. You know, as you level up, you can, you know, put points in those stats. But, like, all of those numbers translate to the gameplay. Like, even in parts where frustrating things happen to you, like, everything works on those rules. Like, everything has numbers. Like, your stamina bar, Depending on the points that you put in endurance, your stamina bar gets longer, and the enemies that attack you, all of their attacks and all of their defenses work on the same basic principles as your character. So like, if you want to break,
this all sounds like Skyrim.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, to some extent, I mean, Skyrim is like that. But I mean, I've played Bethesda games before, and just like the focus on first-person combat and the fluidity with the controls isn't really there for me. I just don't have the same experience with the combat as Skyrim. I mean,
I think people
aside
with the combat
being
in Skyrim,
unable to roll,
just not that.
Yeah,
fun.
They made a lot of advancements with the third-person camera in Skyrim. It no longer feels like a user hack mod.
Yeah, well, that's good. I guess I'll look forward to seeing how that translates. But just like being able to see and control everything that's going on around you, and knowing that everything works on very well defined rules, and the computer's not cheating when it sends out a bunch of enemies at you. I mean, if you figure things out properly, and you've got the right, you make the right decisions, you can get through it. I mean, if you don't prepare adequately, you'll die, obviously, and you do die quite frequently. But it does make sense. If you reach a point where your guard keeps getting broken, you either have to dodge, or you have to use a different shield that will give you more stamina, or you need to put more points in the stamina so your guard doesn't get broken, or you just have to try a different strategy. And also a funny thing that about Dark Souls is the online system is kind of weird. Like, you can't just, if you have a friend you want to play with, you can't just contact that person and say, "Hey, let's co-op Dark Souls." You just can't do that. And I won't get into it in detail on that. It's been written about elsewhere. But like, I wonder how much of that is a conscious decision. Like, we want to design this game this way so that you're sort of alone in the world, and if you want to co-op with someone, you have to put down a sign, or you just have to call some random person that you find available.
Yeah.
Or whether that was purposely designed that way because of the PS3's shitty online, because, of course, like, Demon's Souls is the predecessor of this game, and it was sort of, it had that same sort of principle where you can randomly summon people to help you, and that same kind of weird premise sort of carries into Dark Souls, where you can't just find someone on your friends list and summon them into your game. Like, you can't, if you join a covenant, you can't join a covenant with your friends and summon them when you want to. You sort of have to lay down your sign or have your friend, and of course you can't contact them within the game. You can't just send them a message to do this. You have to somehow, ensure, like, through other means, by like calling them on the telephone, like telling, like, "Hey, let's play."
Well, you're not supposed to.
It's almost like
no.
It's almost like the old.
That's the thing that shows it's a very conscious decision, was because you can do that in Demon's Souls. You can lay down spots in specific areas and tell your friend. But in Dark Souls, they changed it so that when you join, you're connected to a random server. You can't connect to the same server necessarily that your friends are connected to. Like, they specifically implemented, unseeable or invisible roadblocks in the path of being able to connect to other people that they added on from Demon's Souls.
Okay, so you're saying that this is a design choice that was made to, because I never played Demon's Souls.
That was
like,
very
I don't,
specifically implemented
so that people couldn't.
Yeah,
like in Demon's Souls, everyone connects to the same server, so you can place a spot, you can place a marker in a very specific area and tell your friend, "Hey, go here and connect to my game," and they can go there and find your sign and connect to your game. In Dark Souls, they make it so that, like I was saying, when you connect online, you connect to a random server. So when you get online and put a spot there, your friend could connect and randomly get put on a completely different server, and they're not going to see your sign. They cannot connect to your game, no matter where they go.
It's like, even if your friend is, so even if your friend is like in the same like town as you, or like in the house like across the way, that like basic proximity isn't going to ensure even if you're playing the game at the same time, you lay the sign down, there's no way they can see it.
Yeah, like I don't know how they decide what server it is that you join, but they put those roadblocks in. They added them in from Demon's Souls.
But I don't know. Like, I guess, like, it's interesting the way it's done. Like, I wonder how much better or the online component could have been. I mean, there are all these covenants in the game that you can join, and they all give you different... A lot of them are basically based upon multiplayer. There's covenants based on helping people. There's covenants based on invading other people's games and killing them. You can choose which ones you want to join. But, like, I wonder how much better it could have been if there was just at least some basic way in which you could contact someone you were associated with. Because... In a way, there's kind of a mechanism that does this. I mean, if there's a covenant that has you attacking people who have invaded other people's games, like there's a book of the guilty that you can open up that will sort of show, you know, who these people are, and then you can go and kill them. But like, if there was some kind of basic way that there was some kind of book that you could at least see who else was in your covenant, and then join them based on that. Would that have taken that much out of the experience? I don't really think so, but it would have made online just that easier to accomplish. And the online seems to be pretty busy now. I've been able to summon people into my game, and I've been able to, and I've been invaded by other people, you know, pretty regularly. But like, I don't know. It seemed to me that a lot of that had to do with like deriving from the PS3's crappy online system, but you know, maybe I'm completely wrong about that. Maybe it was a conscious design choice.
Does you have a guild that you can,
or something, just some kind of
call other people in, like in Monster
Hunter? I mean, there is a covenant that you can join that'll sort of.
Yeah, I only mentioned Athena once.
Yeah,
keep it.
There's covenants you can join that make it like more likely that you'll join people of that particular covenant, but it's nothing specific. You can't pick out particular people to join. And, you know, I think it could have been better if they changed that one aspect of it. But having said all of that, I think the game's amazing. It's great. It's probably my favorite game of the year. It's the only game that I've, you know, put like 50, 60 hours into already this year. So, nice. Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, that is the measure of a good game. If I've spent more than 40 hours playing it, certainly that makes a good game. And I'm compelled to play the new game plus, too. Like, at some point, I'm just looking forward to that, like going through the game again. So at some point, I'll get to Skyrim, but I've got to finish Dark Souls first. So that's what I've been playing.
Oh, great update! Yeah, thanks.
Oh, one thing I want to mention that I just found out about recently is that this has nothing to do with anything, except for Monster Hunter. Monster Hunter Try on the Wii. But let me just say, yeah, Monster Hunter Try on the Wii has its own like network connection, so you actually don't need friend codes or anything. You log onto the Capcom servers at the Guild Hall, and you see other people who are also playing Monster Hunter, and you can play with them. So it somehow bypasses all of the dumb Wii crap to let you play a game online like you're supposed to, and it uses the Animal Crossing microphone to let you talk to each other. So it breaks all of the known Wii conventions of being horrible. If you guys want to buy that game and play it with me, I think that would be amazing. We should do it sometime.
So it's trying to sucker everyone into it.
Anyway,
oh, God.
It's a member of the Monster Hunter affiliate program. The more people I can get in.
I just want people to share in my misery.
Yeah, when you buy the game, there's actually a "were you referred by anyone?" It's a 12-step help list. All right.
So, yeah.
Chuck's
next.
Yeah, so this week, that's the last time I'll mention it. I played Metal Gear Solid 3, and I got to the crab battle part. I laughed really hard. Yeah, exactly. It was fantastic. I don't remember there being so many crabs. I could see why you would be so terrified.
Doctor, I don't remember there being so many crabs.
Oh, there's...
What the hell?
Josh will have fun with that. He'll cut that out. So I played that for a little bit. Decided to do the Endless Setlist 3 in Rock Band 3.
Oh my god. Have you done them previously, Chuck? Because I did the first one with John, and it was...
I did the first
the
two.
Second one.
Yeah, I did the first two. Not a lot of good songs in Rock Band 3, I'm remembering. But the good ones are spread out every, I don't know, 10 to 15 songs. So you'll play a few and you'll get really tired of it. And then a good song will come on. You'll be like, oh, all right. You know, you get pumped up. And then, by the ninth song.
Well, has that shit died off
yet? I have a question.
Is that done now?
Are the songs that you purchase from Rock Band, one Rock Band game to another, do those carry over?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. The main disc for Rock Band 1 was able to be carried over to Rock Band 2. Then the disc from 2 was able to go to 3.
Yeah, because...
And Lego and Green Day were able to go into 3 also.
Yeah, I just have the original Rock Band. Like, I never picked up the sequels. I bought a couple...
I think 2 was good enough.
Yeah.
2 was good enough to deserve a purchase, I think. By 3, I already didn't care, and I'm surprised. Do you think these games are still... Like, is it going to be a Rock Band 4?
Well, no, I think that moment, like, 3-4 years ago was huge. I remember everybody was playing Rock Band, even people who didn't like video games were in a Rock Band. People were having Rock Band mm-hmm. parties, bars were having, like, Rock Band nights, and now it's completely disappeared. Like, nobody plays it anymore.
Yeah,
it's
and
amazing.
That's what it was. We would have Rock Band 2 parties, you know, at my mm-hmm. apartment when we were doing it. And we played it at PAX also, didn't we? Like, pretty much we blew up the hotel room with people
with
singing bad covers of Journey and, yeah. And then when we bought my house, Rock Band 3 had just came out. And I remember I had a lot of people come around for that. Rambo drove down from Philly to hang out. And it was good times. But nobody really does it anymore. And it's not because it's bad. You know, it's fun getting together with everybody and playing the game all in the same room. I mean, I know we live in an age where Xbox Live makes it super simple for everybody to do it, you know, mm-hmm. right in the same place. But, you know, you don't want to sit there, grab a few beers, play Xbox Live, and be like, oh, bro, I'm totally singing the shit out of the song, dude, you know? That's something you want to do in your living room, not over the internet. But yeah, I think that ship has definitely.
It's too bad. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I bought the Pixies album. I remember for the original Rock Band at like I think they had the entire Doolittle album for download. Yeah, which
Doolittle
was awesome. I thought that was great. So I had a lot of fun with it. It's just funny how that cultural moment has just completely passed and no one buys those games anymore.
I mean, I think part of the problem is that you don't need a new game released
year.
You know, you just need to update the engine through patches, and then just add more songs. And I mean, it was a whole,
Well, and let's be honest, Rock Band, aside from the missteps of Lego and Green Day, they haven't had nearly as many as Guitar Hero did.
No.
It was saturation, basically, I think, that completely killed the market.
If they had just added more and more albums, downloadable albums, I think people would have been down with it. But...
Well, and they did. I mean, they still do. And Rock Band Network is huge right now, because Rock Band Network is letting a lot of indie people get in there. And I have some stuff like from Anamanaguchi and nice. Like there's some Super Meat Boy songs are on there too.
Oh wow,
it's the
that's
craziest
great!
Shit in
I mean,
the world.
I found out about a lot of bands through Rock Band. I learned about the band Freeze Pop through Rock Band, and I just saw one of their shows last night here in Tucson. So
kidding! That's awesome. Yeah, I saw them. I saw them at PAX, and then I stalked them. And the next weekend, they were in my hometown. So then I saw them. And they're like, "Hey, we just saw you in Boston," and I was like, "I gotta get out of here."
And what we also complain about all the time, or I complain about all the time, is I'm sure the Harmonix people are all very nice people who are very talented at making games. But you need to get your little bands the fuck out of Rock Band, because I don't want to play your songs ever.
They are the worst. Freeze Pop is an exception, though.
I think that they were friends of Harmonix. I think that's how they got into the thing in the first place.
No, one of the main dudes, I forget, they all have goofy names. The Duke, he worked for Harmonix.
Okay.
He was the Duke of Panacoken.
Yeah, right.
But he's not in
this
band anymore. So yeah, like everybody's saying, they didn't really burn out so much as people just don't get around together to do it. I mean, in people my age, you know, most of us have kids or got married. It's not as easy to just drop everything, drink, and hang out, you know?
Yeah, maybe
now I gotta wake up and change diapers. And
the demographic that it appealed to is just, you know, not that into buying yearly updates of games.
nobody should be into buying.
Yeah. Well, no,
yeah,
that's not exactly it, because you got to look at sales of Madden and Call of Duty. I don't think it's that. I just think that it's a very particular group of people who were buying it who don't fall into those kind of tropes. You know, like the people who are going to buy those.
But I would argue even
exactly,
with like Modern Warfare, the Modern Warfare games, I think mostly the people that are buying those are younger. Like I know some. I mean, I play it, and I'm older. Compared to other people, I guess.
You played it while you were in
college,
didn't you?
Yeah, I think most of the people who drive that are younger.
I think they're mostly playing it for the multiplayer.
Yeah,
I remember the exact moment that I stopped playing Xbox Live multiplayer with randoms instead of with friends. I think it was in Halo 2 when I was killed by some little 12-year-old kid, and he was cursing at me so much.
Oh my gosh! But remember,
and I was like,
remember,
what is happening? This is, and I had to stop.
That used to be the big deal, though, is after we would finish the match. This was right before everybody left to play Warcraft.
Yeah.
Remember how everybody would just wait for me to just destroy these little kids? It was so good. I was the foulest dude on Xbox Live.
Forever.
Yes, I'm really surprised I didn't get banned for the stuff that I would say about them and their family and their parents and their
it was pretty good.
Pets and who knows what. I was the problem. Yeah, there's nothing else I could say about it. I've also played some King of Fighters 13.
Yeah, how was that?
Because like everybody else said, I buy too many games and whatever. It's good. It's King of Fighters. If you like King of Fighters, you'll like this. The net code is, what's the best way I can say it? It's not bad. It's certainly better than the other SNK games that have been released lately. And I know that's a lot of people's their apprehension to buying the game is the net code. It's not fantastic. It's not 100%. But if you get a good match of like a 3-bar match or a 4-bar match, you're not going to have any issues. 2 gets a little iffy, but it's not the slideshow that I've seen from other SNK games.
The main intimidating thing for King of Fighters is that I know that Street Fighter has a lot of characters, but for me, like King of Fighters has so many different characters, and because I haven't played as many SNK games, like I just don't know them as well. So like,
you don't know the
inputs
as well.
Yeah, and they're different. Like SNK games have different inputs, so it's really hard for me to get used to. I mean, I really like the King of Fighters games and the the Fatal Fury series of games. I like
it looks fantastic.
I love the art design. I've always liked the character design for those games, but it's just hard for me to get used to. I'd like to get into it, though.
King of Fighters is kind of more Japanesey, than something
super
like Street Fighter, which has more universal.
Well, yeah, it's...
I feel.
You know what? I won't even call it more Japanesey. It's more Asian, because you've got all the Korean fighters, you've got all the Muay fighters, you've got a hand... What American fighters do you have? Like the Fatal Fury guys?
Yeah.
That's about
it.
The Ikari Warriors?
Geese Howard. Terry Bogard.
Geese
American? That's a common American
game,
right? Geese?
Well, I think Geese, but he's like from South Town or whatever for Fatal Fury. Maybe that's it. He's not in the game.
He's from fictional America.
He's up in a gi and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like Podunk.
Japanese.
Athena is also
in
the game.
Oh, she's got that ultra, that super desperation move.
Wait, is this the same Athena from the NES?
Yes, it's the same Athena.
Yeah, they've said it is.
That's a great game, by the way.
It's more the Psycho Soldier Athena than the NES Athena, but it is technically the same character.
That's a great game on the NES.
Isn't it?
Yeah. The one thing that I do like about the game is that they have a lot of the interactions between the characters before the fights. Stuff like Street Fighter Alpha had before, like your rival battle, you'd have one person who would say something. Like, just about everybody has some crap to talk about everybody else when you're playing the game. So that's fun.
Do people talk about Mai's boobies all the time?
Somebody said something about your mom would be very embarrassed by the outfit you're wearing and stuff like that, and then she took offense to it, and it was good times. She's always looking for Andy, so, hey, you're fighting Terry, and she's like, have you seen Andy anywhere? And he's like, shut up, let's fight.
Andy was a blonde-haired guy, right, with the white outfit?
Yeah.
Was it Andy Bogard?
Terry
Bogard's brother?
Mm-hmm. Right. You got it.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, look at that.
See, I know a little bit.
You know enough characters.
Some of the backstories.
His was killed by Geese.
He's
got Blue
part.
Mary and King, and who else do I like? I mean, Maya's
Billy
cool.
Kane.
Theo. Do they have like a million Orochi characters?
What about Rock Howard?
There's Yori and
is Rock Howard in the game?
Who
is like him?
No, Rock. All of the Goro Mark of the Wolf people, they're all Kushnud in the backgrounds
Butt.
Of the.
Is he making an appearance?
Yeah, Nishwood Butt is in the back of like two of the backgrounds. He's in one of them, and it's really weird because there's all these jungle animals, and then Nishwood is just chilling out there.
Well,
it might be a little racist.
I guess if
I
the
know.
Game has has Ryo, I mean, it doesn't really need Kushnud Butt. Because they're the same character.
Well, yeah, you do have the Ryo and Robert and all them from Art of Fighting.
Because I like Shermie.
I don't think Shermie's in it.
What? Fuck.
You could probably show me a picture of Shermie and not tell me who she is, and I wouldn't know. So that's what's that?
She's a grappler, kind of.
She has hair over the eyes. That's all I know.
Hair over the eyes. Oh, no, she's not. The only grapplers in the game, I think, are the Ikari Warriors and Raiden.
Is that chick that hangs out with Ikari Warriors on there? I forgot her name, but I like her.
Oh, Leona. Yeah, Leona? I use Leona a little bit.
Leona? Yeah, that's it, Leona. I like
the
her.
The people I use most of the time is Mai, King, and Terry. Every now and then I'll use Leona instead of Terry. But people are a lot better at that game than I am. And it's not like Street Fighter where you can kind of know. If you're playing this and you get juggled and you're playing against somebody who knows, you're ruined. It sucks, but whatever.
So is it like a really loose kind of engine where you just stay in the air forever with a string of moves, or?
Sort of. Think of infinites from like Street Fighter Alpha 3 and stuff like mm-hmm. that. I'm sure they're not infinite. You know, they're probably playing well within the boundaries of the system. But they have, and again, I haven't played a lot of it. There's you hit all four of the attack buttons, and your second gauge goes away, and you move a little faster, almost like custom combos from 2. Yeah. So again, I gotta spend some more time with it. The mission mode, which would be like the trials in Street Fighter 4, are a lot more strict with the inputs. Like you have to know exactly what you're doing, or it's not gonna work. So that's nice, but it makes me want to throw my joystick across the room
and hit the baby.
Yes. No. No. Don't do that.
Don't hit the baby.
And other than KOF, I got Battlefield 3 the other day.
Oh, how was that?
And that's fun. I got it because it was cheap. That and Assassin's Creed were some Black Friday deals. But Battlefield 3, I realized that it's one of those games where everybody who has been playing it has all of these wonderful weapons, and I don't. So I just have to eat crap for like a week or two before I get everything up to where I need to be. Because everybody has such a incredible advantage over anything that I have right now. But it's fun. You know, I got into a good squad game with some other TNL people, and we won. I didn't contribute much, but we won. So, you know, I can't complain about it. I just feel
you,
like I don't
You
help
definitely
out.
Held up that back rank.
I did. It was like no kills, 18 losses, and I was just like, yeah, doing work.
Just feeding the enemy in Battlefield 3.
I really am. And the problem with that is, you know, you have tickets, and tickets are just lives. So if you're trying to assault a base and your team starts off with 200 tickets, I cost them a tenth of their tickets. So, bad times. I gotta do better. And lastly, I've been playing some Skyrim. I found the Hogwarts of Skyrim up in some janky old winter town. Because I'd only been doing the main quest for a while, and I got not tired of it, but I wanted to play a mage, and I figured it would be best if I go to the Hogwarts. So now I'm doing that. Haven't finished all of it. I just found like some crazy orb down in the basement of wherever it was that I was at. And he said, hey, go talk to the Archmage. And there's this one dude who's mean mugging every single time I see him. And I really want to kill him because he looks at me funny. And that's a problem I have in this game. If you talk bad to me in Skyrim or you look at me funny, you're probably going to die in your sleep. That's just how I play the game.
In their sleep?
Yeah. No, I wait until they fall asleep and then I lockpick the door and then it's just dead. It's good times.
Oh,
every time.
No, I kill them outright.
Oh, you just do it right in the
street. Yeah, I usually, like, turn on sneak and start, like, hopping behind them and wait for them to stop going, sir, stop following me. And as soon as they turn around,
you just cut them.
Stab them from behind, and, like, no one sees the crime in the middle of town. It's
That's
amazing.
Fantastic. It's like I was doing something at night, and I didn't think anybody was near me because it's the winter hold or whatever the place is called. And it's very dark because of all the snow. And it said, it didn't say that I was detected. So I went ahead and I picked a lock for somebody that had talked badly to me. But the guard saw it and he was just like, how would you choose to pay for this? And it's like, you can either try to fight the guard. You can go to jail and wait, I think. And then you can just pay the bounty. So I just paid the five gold. And then I went back and killed the person and stole everything they had because he cost me five gold in addition to calling me names.
But I actually killed a guy in the middle of guard barracks. It was a quest. I think it was for Dark Brotherhood. And this guy's walking back and forth in the middle of the barracks. And it's like, if you actually alert the guards, they'll all wake up. And there's like 10 of them in there. And I just killed this guy right when one of the guards turned around. But one of them still kind of saw me. And he comes over and he's like, how do you want to pay for your crime? And there's like bounty, 40 gold. Yeah. I'm part of the guild, 330 gold. And it was like, I was like, paid him. And he was just like, oh, okay. We didn't see anything here.
And yeah, we're just going to turn around.
Nice.
Yeah, that's good times. So that's pretty much all I've been doing. But I know, Chris, you've been playing some more Skyrim, so if you have anything else you want to add into that.
The other amazing scene that I actually had in Skyrim, I think this is amazing. I was talking to this guy out in the wilderness. I was walking through and bumping into this random dude. And he's talking to me, and I hear this roar, but I'm not really sure what it belongs to, and we're still chatting. And this dragon head,
you better pray it's not a bear,
in from off screen. It pokes in from the right side of the screen, and there's just a little head kind of sitting there, and I'm like, what's going on? And because I'm talking with this guy, I'm locked in conversation with him. I can't turn my camera. And the dragon head disappears, and I'm like, is there a scripted event going on? And the dragon head pops back in, and it starts breathing fire on the guy, but he's still talking with me as though we're totally cool. And the head disappears again, and then comes back, and the guy finally finishes his conversation, and I turn over, and it was just a completely random dragon who happened to land and just kept poking his head in our conversation. And
he's like, oh, you were finished?
He's a very rude dragon.
Rude as hell.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually reached the same point you did in Hogwarts. I found the giant sphere and went, that's cool, and then went off and started doing other quests.
See, I'm going to finish everything. I don't like to just stop, except for the main quest, which I explicitly just said that I went off and gone on a tangent. This one, I'm going to see it through, because I tried that stuff with Oblivion, and I mean, Oblivion was the worst game overall, but I did a little bit of the Thieves quest in Oblivion, and then I did some Assassin stuff, and I was just like, you know. But that was a good way for me to get lost in what I was doing and then really not care about the game at all. So I'm going to do everything I can in the mage quarters.
Like, I polished off one of them. I don't remember which one. Like, I just, like, went in, did all the quests, finished up. I think it was the, I can't even think of what they're called. They're not the Brotherhood. It's that group of guys that are in Whiterun, the secret group. But I did that, and then, like, I'm like halfway through Dark Brotherhood and halfway through Thieves Quest and, you know, like partway into the Mage's Guild. And it was like each time I've been like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and finish this up. Oh, but this other quest is right here. I keep doing that. I got to stop it. I got to focus and just plow through. But man, it's so rough. But the other thing I've been playing was I finished off Assassin's Creed Revelations earlier this week. And which was actually like really good. I mean, I enjoy the Assassin's Creed game, so that happens. But they made a lot of improvements. There's some things which aren't that great, but overall, I think they did a really good job with this. But what I have actually been loving is the multiplayer. Which
what was? I don't want to interrupt too much, but what was your playtime on Revelations?
I'd have to look it up. I don't know where they said it. I know Assassin's Creed 2 took me like 24 hours. Brotherhood was something close to that, or around that, I think a little bit more. I have to check to see what this was. I mean, it took me a couple days to get through, so it's got to be somewhere in like the 20s 15? Range.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm
just maybe it was. Like, I did 100% of the, you know, sync ratio on the story missions. I didn't do, like,
bump
all the side quest stuff. Yeah. It's really not hard. Like, I did almost all of it. There were, like, only two missions I screwed up on that I had to go back and do afterwards. But I'm loving the multiplayer, which I was kind of expecting it to be, like, okay, but it's so good. I love the fact that it actually promotes the whole idea of Assassin's Creed, like, blending in out in the open, like, so much more than the actual single-player game does. Like, single-player game, you can run around, murk people all day, and then go blend in with the crowd if you like it. And multiplayer is 100% about looking like an NPC at all times.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I really, did you play Brotherhood for the multiplayer? I forget.
No, I didn't. Like, I was kind of going to, and I was like, I'll just hold off and play Revelation.
So this is the first time you really had, like, a interaction with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's been fantastic. There's one mode I have a problem with, because you have to, which is assassinate, because you have to, like, target someone, and then hold left trigger to lock on. And for some reason, something about it feels really janky, and I keep not locking on to people I want to. And I don't know, maybe I'm missing something, but I did absolutely terrible during that. But a lot of the other ones are so good. And it was, like, it was great. I was doing, I think it was, like, my second match ever. I had 4 kills and 8 deaths. But because I countered everyone's kills, and because everyone else was playing like it was, you know, an action game, and I was actually doing stealth kills and blending in all the time, I was in first place.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, they actually really reward you for playing the game correctly, which is just fantastic.
Wow, that's interesting, actually. I'm kind of curious about that now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's weird, because when I first heard about it for Brotherhood, I was like, you know, I was kind of part of that camp of, oh boy, it's multiplayer in a single-player game that's just been kind of shoddily added on.
That was why I assumed,
but now
too.
That I've actually sat down and played it, yeah, but having sat down and played
it's a
good amount
of
it,
fun.
Yeah, like, it's really well done. And the fact that it actually, you know, promotes the idea of the game better than the single player does is kind of surprising, like, the whole playstyle of it.
The main thing about that is, you know, the AI is only scripted to see so much, but when you're playing against people who are looking for you to mess up, that's when you really have to do it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's, like, so much stuff that you can't even do in the main single-player game. Like, if there's someone who's hunting you, and you know that they're hunting you, you can specifically move around, wait for them, and then stun them, and run off. And, like, that sort of thing just doesn't exist in the single-player game. Like, you can...
Oh, yeah, the game of
kill
cat and mouse that it creates after that.
Right. Like, you can just outright kill people, or you can, like, kind of hide, and then assassinate people and slip them in there, but there isn't any of that, like, here is a serious threat chasing you. If they catch you, it is a single-hit kill. So you have to, like, be aware at all times and, like, really watch which way they're going. And it's just, you know, it's done really well. And when you're playing against other people who are also really good, it's fantastic. Like, there was one guy I was trailing. I knew he was a human, but he was acting just like an NPC, and it took so long because I didn't want to spook him for me to finally sneak up and kill him. But when I finally did, like, it was such a great kill.
So you didn't want to spook him. So you didn't run up to him and go, Spaghet!
Spaghet!
Hey, Spaghet!
Spaghet!
Getting a Tim and Eric reference there. I like it.
Yeah.
Totally spooked you.
I also at some point need to put on my microphone, even though it is hilarious. Just, there was one guy I got, we were doing Corruption, which is where... It's a mode that shows up in various multiplayer games under different names, but you basically have, like, as one group kills the second group becomes part of the first group. And so one group is constantly growing bigger, trying to assimilate everyone.
So it's like zombies.
Yeah, it's like that. And so I was one of the uncorrupted, and I knocked out this one kid 3 times in a row. Like, he kept trying to run up to me, and I would just stun him right away. And finally, on, like, the third one, out of my speakers just comes this, God damn it, stop that! And I just vanished off into the crowd, and it was, like, fantastic.
I can totally imagine a thing where you're hunting somebody down, and you're about to get them, and you lock onto the wrong person, and you tackle the dude next to them by accident. And
yes.
That would make me crack up pretty bad. I think
it happens all the time.
Oh, I'm sure.
Actually, during the... some of those corrupted ones, I was playing as a corrupted, and you look down, and people can make clones of themselves so that you can't tell which one is the right character. And so what I would do is I knew that all my teammates were coming in on this one guy, and so I would jump into the crowd in hopes that I would get the right one, and I would kill a civilian by accident. And so the person who was real would immediately punch me in the face and knock me out, and then be surrounded by like four guys, and one of them would kill him, and then another one would just kick him in the head once he was down. Because you can do ground kills to like get bonus points. Like, if you didn't get the main kill and you happened to have that person as a target. So it was always just like gang bang, kill, punt, and everyone then scatters off again. But yeah, it's awesome. I love it so much. I did not even expect. I don't know how long the high will last, but it's so good. Cool.
It sounds
It's a very tense game.
It reminds me a lot of the Spies versus Mercs thing that Splinter Cell had going on, just because
yeah,
it's something
really
so completely different from the usual multiplayer. I'm not saying they're similar in a gameplay perspective. I'm just saying that they're very similar in that there's something unique in the multiplayer world, so it makes it instantly
I hope it lasts. I played Spies versus Mercs for a while with Pandora Tomorrow and in the sequel, What was it called? Chaos Theory? Yeah,
Chaos Theory.
I thought those games were both amazing in the multiplayer. So, just so unique and so different. I know that after a while, people would invent their own unique games, like, you know, like Tag or something they'd come up with, like, that were, you know, really pretty lame. And then they would kick out people if you refused to play their lame made-up games and not the actual game with them.
Yeah.
So that was that. I mean, I love the idea of the multiplayer, and I loved when I actually managed to succeed at it. It was fantastic. But I remember that the other people that I played that game with on TNL were like vastly better at it than I was. So like I would always bring down whatever team that I was on, you know, because I was not as completely knowledgeable in the multiplayer as they were. So even though I really enjoyed the multiplayer, I was never all that great at it, and I just wish it was still around today so that I could become better at it, I guess, if that makes any sense. So
yeah, I mean, I actually kind of thought the same thing as Mizzou at first too, which was like, wow, this is like the best stealth multiplayer game I played since Spies versus Mercs. I just didn't ever want to avoid actually Or I wanted to avoid making that comparison because I didn't want people to get the idea that it plays similar at all.
Oh, right, yeah,
it's
not
just
at
that
all.
It happens to be a stealth game and multiplayer. That's really amazing. So yeah, it's definitely something that should not be overlooked by people if they have any interest in stealth games. So, but yeah, that's pretty much all I've been playing. Just too much Skyrim, and Christ, I packed in so much Assassin's Creed.
So we're all having a lot of fun. That's good.
You said you packed in so much ass Assassin's Creed.
Yep.
I want to wrap this up and play Zelda some more. Today's my day off, and I've been waiting a long time for this.
Okay, so
don't wake up at 6 p.m. or 8 p.m.
Have we talked to everybody about... have we gone around the round table here? Talked about what we're playing? I think we can wrap this up then. For everyone who's listening to this podcast, next week we hope to talk a little bit about the Stop Online Piracy Act. This is a pretty hot issue that a lot of people have been talking about on TNL and in the general media. It is a big thing, and it's actually coming before the House and the Senate as early as December 5th, according to what I've read. In some form. So despite the fact that Congress doesn't seem to be doing that much these days, it actually does stand some chance of being taken up for discussion and possibly even a vote. So I hope to do some research on it and be able to talk fairly intelligently about it next week. And if anybody listening to this podcast has any questions about the Stop Online Piracy Act or opinions or things that you think that we should talk about,
Or you just want to get your stupid voice on the
yeah, or you just want to,
because you're an egomaniac.
Get your voice on there in some fashion.
Like me.
Yeah. You know, leave your questions on the podcast thread, which we still do have, right, Nick?
Yes.
And
we have a separate one for every podcast, so people can keep focused.
Leave your questions there or call the podcast number at 312-233-2865 and leave a message, right, Nick?
Yeah. And we're also going to be bringing in, we've been planning to do this for a while now, but we have I think Chuck's, the first time you were on the show, I said today's resident expert on Metal Gear is Chuck's, because I wasn't sure if you were going
to... Yeah, I kind of just never got the memo.
Yeah, you're the guy that never leaves. No, but no, thank God you didn't leave, but I wasn't sure if you would be doing it week after week, and we're going to have Bon, of course, who is a fighting game legend, the founder of TNL, the founder of a lot of things, a very talented guy, is going to be on talking about fighting games. He's really an expert at that. Hopefully,
well, things Nick doesn't want to promote.
Hopefully, in the next few weeks, he's a great guy. And if anybody else has any ideas for the show, just leave it 312-233-2865. We're going to finally put this thing on iTunes. This is our fifth podcast in this series of podcasts. So I think we kind of worked out the kinks enough, and maybe, you know, get the word out. And I know there's a lot of people out there who want to participate, and we're here. We're going to be here. At least I will.
All right. Well, I guess we'll take it out then. Remind everyone to continue visiting the TNL website at the-nextlevel.com. That's the-nextlevel.com. And visit us at the forums.
Or, of course, sorry to interrupt, yes, but you can always Google the next level, and we're usually the first or one of the first links, at least whenever I Google it.
That's how your grandma finds Facebook.
Exactly. One day we will only use search engines and bookmarks to get to places.
Yeah, we won't actually type things in search bars.
Yeah, who wants to type the-nextlevel? Come on.
I use bookmarks.
And just to be clear, it is a hyphen, not a dash.
Not a dash.
Not a hymen.
Not a hymen either.
If you're super cool, the next level is your homepage, like myself.
Yeah. True.
So, okay.
All right.
Catch you all later.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
All right.
Next week.
Bye-bye.